Hey, Pardon My Take listeners. You can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. On today's Pardon My Take, we have Joel McHale. Great interview with him. And then the continuation of our Dungeons & Dragons fantasy adventure. We have our good friend Tim Woods back on to pick up where we left off. Don't worry, we gave everyone a refresher at the start. And we're in some shit. Let's just say that. Cliffhanger, we're in some shit. We have Hot Seat, Cool Throne, a little recap of the match, part two. Whether you're searching for a home to buy or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can find the home that's just right for you. You can favorite homes, share listings with others, and even schedule tours with a local Redfin agent all in the app. When you're ready to buy, an experienced local Redfin agent can guide you through the whole process. So download the Redfin app today to get started. Okay, let's go.
Presented by Barstool Sports.
Welcome to Part of My Take, presented by the Cash App. Go download it right now and then go to their Twitch channel, twitch.tv/Cash App, and they're giving away free money. All you got to do is put your cash tag in it in their chat when they go live. Today is Tuesday, May 26th. Happy Memorial Day, guys. Yeah, summer has begun.
It just felt like an extra long Tuesday the entire weekend.
Summer's so here, dude.
It sucks going outside on Memorial Day and not smelling grilled meats everywhere.
This is what we should do. We should just make a pledge to each other right now. Most epic summer ever.
Let's do it. Let's all lose our virginities this summer, guys.
I'm going to take a vacation next week. Fine.
There we go.
Fine. Hank.
Fine.
Go for it. Live your best life.
Learn how to surf. I'm reading a book still. Most epic summer ever.
This is the summer that I get a six-pack.
I really do feel bad for, I've been thinking about this a lot. Like, if you're in your 26? If you're in your mid-20s, you're just giving away a year of your prime.
It's prime. Prime
it's
stuff.
Like, it's like Sean Payton getting suspended for a year with the Saints. Like, you have just given away a year that you'll never get back. Because I think often about, like, oh, man, remember when I was in my 20s? It was awesome in the summer. If I had to give one of those years away...
Even worse. I think while I do appreciate your sorrow for me and
it's
people
genuine.
Of my age group, I think the people that really suffer are the kids more in Billy's age group that are 18 to 22. And it's like your summer job is only for money for beer, and every single night you're going hard. Like when I was that age, it was truly the summer was truly like any money I got was just going back into like the party fund.
Counterpoint.
And that summer sucks.
Counterpoint though. If you're between 18 and 22, you still have your entire 20s summers to look forward to.
True.
Like, there is still some great summers. If you're in your late 20s, the clock is ticking on your, like, that vibe that you get when it's summertime. You're like, I'm not really going to work that hard. I'm going to go on a bunch of trips, maybe a bunch of bachelor parties. I'm just going to go balls to the wall. I have a little cash in my pocket. You're losing a prime year, and guess what? You're going to have to retire soon anyway.
Even your late 20s, that's almost even too late. Like, I would say... If you just graduated college, you get this entire year is going to be a free roll for you. You get to celebrate next summer just like you were supposed to celebrate this summer.
It's you know what it's like? It's basically you need to just update your stat sheet for running back carries. You miss an entire year, so when you're 30,
you got fresh legs.
And people are like, "Well, he's a 30-year-old running back." It's like, "Dude, not many touches in the summer of 2020."
Yeah, you're still healthy. You've got both your livers. I think you have two of those.
Yeah, he didn't rack up the mileage. He's got those fresh legs going.
I say just say fuck it. This year doesn't count. It doesn't count. Whatever you do this summer does not count on your permanent record.
We should
I'll write
all
a letter.
Be the same age next year.
Yeah, this it's a year off.
That would be awesome. That would be sick.
Okay.
We should do that.
We didn't age.
So we're
still 29.
We're turning 35.
We're still 29.
Yeah. 20,
I can't. I'm so pumped to be 23 next year.
You know what they're gonna do? They should take what they did with the match two, the rematch of Tiger and Phil and Tom and Peyton, and just
oh,
do
we're
it,
on first name basis.
Just do it every other week with a different celebrity like pairing.
Yeah,
just
I like, was saying,
but keep Tiger and Phil.
Could you imagine if our boy Brooks was matched up with our boy Cuddy? That would be electric.
That'd be sick.
The people's champs.
God damn.
Going after him. So the match two was the big story from the weekend. It was awesome. Tom Brady with the most relatable golf game ever, where on a big stage just shanked everything and then had one shot that he can go to sleep saying, holy shit, I'm going pro. Well, it was everyone's golf game ever,
so
although he's better than us.
It's a mixed blessing because, yeah, he at least got that one shot where he's like, that was sick. Everyone saw that I can hit a good shot. But now he has to keep playing golf for the rest of his
life.
You can't quit. There have been so many times when I've been almost ready to quit golf, and then I hit a shot like on the 18th hole, and then I'm like, well, I can't totally quit golf. I play once a year.
Yeah, I was going to say, we quit golf.
We're very bad.
Maybe
in fact,
once a year.
The best hole that we played last year.
Like, what are you talking about? I don't golf.
I hit my putter, I think, seven times. I just said fuck it to all my irons and drivers. I was like, I'm just going to putt this par four, and I got a seven on it, which I think is best hole.
Yeah, Tony Scheffler had to give you money.
That's right, yeah. I took $200 off him. But yeah, it was good to have sports on. I didn't think that they were going to play, but they said fuck it. Let's go full send on this round. We're going to play in the rain.
It was fun. It was the mic'd up helped. Phil Mickelson is great on the mic. He's a talker, but I loved hearing him talk. Brady was like, you could tell how mad Brady was, but he had to also play it cool because he's Tom Brady. Like, he's sitting there. Peyton Manning has a third of the Super Bowls of him. He's beat Peyton Manning pretty much every time they played, and he's losing to him in front of the whole country. And he was, you could just tell, like, the inner competitor, he had to be like, stay cool, stay cool. And that one shot basically saved him.
Well, yeah. he said no words.
Round, by far.
He said no words for like eight holes, then he hit that shot and he wouldn't stop talking. Which is also the most relatable thing ever.
Yes.
Where it's like you don't say shit and then you hit one shot, you just start shit talking all your friends.
I also noticed how Peyton Manning, every time he talks, he sounds like he's in the middle of a commercial, delivering like a punchline in a commercial.
Yes.
He just speaks in these little sound bites. It was also relatable, like Brady hit that putt when Phil Mickelson drove the green on that par four. And Brady hits the putt, and then they do the little, like, are we going to high five?
Yeah.
We're going to arm
social
touch?
Social distancing. The only complaint I had, it was actually, like, very, very enjoyable. The only complaint I had was I wish they had just shit-talked a little bit more. Because it was, we had the, you know, oh, yeah, Tennessee hasn't been relevant since you've been there, Peyton. Or, oh, Eli would have made that putt. Like, the little stuff. I wanted them to go in on each other a little bit.
Yeah, like, Ty's like kissing your sister, but me beating you is like making out with your son.
Right.
That sort of
really
thing.
Kind of go at each other.
Exactly.
A little bit.
Yeah. They did a little bit at the start. Peyton like brought up Nick Foles to Brady when he was chipping, and Brady like stopped what he was doing. He was like, "Don't say the NF word."
Yeah. Or like when if Peyton's if Brady outdrives Peyton, be like, "I probably need to hit up your wife for some more of that HGH, Peyton."
Mm-hmm.
Like shit like
that's,
that.
That's what I wanted. The real shit. I
did. And then Phil's like, "Did you say wife? Don't say that word around Tiger. He'll fuck her." That kind of shit.
Isn't Phil Mickelson's wife, wasn't she like in really, really good shape? Because I remember back in the swimsuit issue maybe the late 90s or early 2000s,
right.
They did an athlete's wives segment, and it was like Roger Clemens wearing a suit and then his wife wearing a G-string, basically. And it was Phil Mickelson and his wife, and she was like in much, much better shape than he was. Phil Mickelson, he's always had like the man boobs going.
He looks pretty good right now.
He looks good now, yeah. But in the late 90s, early 2000s, Phil was a frumpy mess.
Yes, he was, but he does look good. And it was fun. It was just fun. Those guys seem like a good time. And I would watch that again. I would watch that every weekend if they provided it.
It's like the highest viewed golf match on cable of all time.
Really?
People love amateur stuff. Like, whether it's pornography or it's golfers, it's almost better watching people who aren't professionals do it.
It was also great when they just gave up on the shot tracers on the amateurs. Like, in the beginning, they tried to, like, trace their shots, and then they realized that...
Yeah, we only have it for the fairway.
Right.
Yeah. Tom Brady hasn't even come close. Did you feel a little relief, Hank, not having to spin zone every bad shot by Brady at the beginning?
No. See, the thing is, like, I still, like, come to bat when I see everyone, like, chirping Tom Brady. Like, I still get that, like... defensive instinct in me to just come to his defense. It doesn't matter that he's on the Buccaneers. People were roasting him unfairly. It was unfair.
Well,
Peyton Manning retired 10 years ago. Obviously, he's better at golf.
There you go. Okay, so you are
that's
defensive.
A good spin zone, yeah.
Yeah.
Who would you like to see in the next match instead of Peyton and Tommy?
Hmm.
Tommy.
I mean, someone said MJ. MJ would be electric. Oh,
MJ, I was actually thinking about that driving in today. I was like, could you imagine? Like,
and Chuck?
Like they Charles don't like each other right now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Charles would be fun to watch Charles just because.
So bad.
I mean,
and Justin Thomas calling him a fat ass was amazing. Like, Charles that was great TV.
Charles was asking for tips during it, like, to Immelman, and was, like, wowed by the tips. Yeah. He's like, wait, that's
keep
true?
Your head down.
Yeah, he's like, oh, shit.
Yeah, that's
no
what
way.
I've been doing wrong. I mean, credit to Charles Barkley. He doesn't have that hitch in his swing anymore.
Yeah.
He's got a smooth swing. He got, what, a bogey or a double bogey?
I think
he
so,
got
yeah.
a double bogey on
Which
the 18th hole.
Great.
That's an eagle as far as Charles Barkley is concerned.
All day.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think golf, I mean, like someone like a huge, like a Wayne Gretzky or like a big hockey guy. I know hockey guys are pretty big golfers.
Ryan Whitney?
Right. Well, like mm-hmm. a big hockey
no,
guy. Like a
Ryan
legendary,
Whitney.
A well-known someone that could.
I'll tell you what. I'm
Sidney
gonna
Crosby,
I'm
gonna, he's been taking the offseason early.
Someone should do
a
video. Someone should do a video golf series with him.
Yeah, I'm going to back up my guy Witt. He would by far be a better personality than anyone else in the NHL right now in terms of on the mic.
I'm saying like all time NHL,
right? But I don't care. I want the fun part was less that it was Tom Brady and Peyton Manning and more it was just the live mic and them kind of going back and forth and Phil like explaining things. That was fascinating to me, so more of that. Other news, all we got is the NFL is proposing the 4th-and-15 onside kick substitution, which I like that a lot.
Yeah, John Harbaugh is nutting himself right now because there's no bylaw in it saying that it has to be for the team that's playing from behind.
Right.
So John Harbaugh can now go for it on 4th down after they score a touchdown.
Well, I would imagine they're going to close that loophole because if you are like up 15, if there's like 10 seconds left, you could just run around in the backfield.
That would be sick.
Right. So they'll close that loophole. Either now or after Belichick or Vrabel takes advantage of it.
Yeah, I hope that they don't close it.
Yeah.
Like, at least let us get some chaos in 1 week and just have, like, Jameis Winston, have Sean Payton run either a double quarterback where it's Jameis Winston and Taysom Hill. They get the snap. They just lateral it to each other and keep running backwards towards their own end zone until the clock runs out. That's going to be – I'm excited to see which coaches use that, like, early on in the game and which ones save because you get two per game, right?
Yeah, but it's the 25-yard line, so that's – You give the ball back there.
Yeah.
That's quite the flip.
Scared money doesn't make money.
It's true. And then the sky judge, which should have happened already. The thing with the sky judge is that all they have to do is officially call it sky judge or even sky judge 10,000, and no one will ever disagree with it.
It doesn't even have to be anything new. It could be the exact same system and just say there's a sky judge.
You don't. Sky Judge gets it right.
Yes.
Like, refs get it wrong.
I think
Sky Judge gets it right.
We just invented religion, is what we did.
Pretty much.
It's like, yeah, we have a police department, but also God.
Yeah, he looks over everything.
So God's
he knows everything.
Sky Judge will fix all of your NFL problems.
Sky Judge 10,000. Call it that.
Okay, Sky.
Get kids that, you know, were scared of the Terminator when they were kids, like, get a little bit fear in me.
Uh-huh.
I'll be like, oh, geez, won't go after Sky Judge 10,000. Uh-huh. It might get smart and chase me down.
SJ 10K.
Yeah, done.
Boom.
Done. All right. We got Hot Seat Cool Throne. You know what that means.
It's time to chug some beers. Some Bud Light seltzers. Excuse me. Some refreshing BLSs. Oh. What do we got here?
Beers with the boys, yeah.
Black cherry and lemon lime.
I'll take the lemon lime.
Lemon lime.
Still coming
here
off.
We
such
go. Get some of that vitamin C.
Such a bender from this weekend.
Are you?
No.
Oh, sick.
No.
Okay.
I think it
was so depressing.
I'm working on a take. I think you get drunker in your living room drinking alone or with friends than you do in a bar with the same amount of drinks.
Absolutely.
Like, I can have 6 beers in my living room and I'll puke on myself, pee myself, and go to sleep. If I have 6 beers in a bar, it's like, okay, my night is 1/10 of the way done.
What are you doing? Oh, Hank just took a false start. False
boo,
start
Hank.
Sip.
Boo. F's in the chat for Hank.
It was depressing getting a text from some friends being like, did you do anything fun for Memorial Day? I'm like, no, dude.
Yeah,
what?
Yeah, I opened up my window.
Of course not. I had a thrilling game against Florida.
I put my rug down.
What?
I put it down.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Is it like, does it go up the walls?
A little tiny bit. And it basically is like my entire living room floor.
For people who don't remember, Hank ordered a rug and
12 by 9 foot
all.
Rug. Yeah.
It's way too big.
Huge news. I found the Doc Antle couch online.
Oh, we should buy it for the studio.
Yeah, we should. It's like, I think it's $7,000. Worth it. I believe it's about 15
feet.
Become
pre-fucked.
It's like 15 feet by 50 feet. You know that the guy that's running the factory floor for that couch absolutely christens every one of them.
Oh, my God.
He just
that's
breaks
incredible.
His condom on it like it's a ship going out to the ocean.
All right, here we go.
With golf season in full swing, Chevy wants to help you make the most of every drive, and the all-electric Blazer EV's bold design and dynamic performance make it the perfect electric vehicle to get you to the course in style and comfort. Chevrolet, together let's drive.
Hank cheated and didn't finish.
This is so good, I just don't want to finish it.
Yes, okay. Saber.
All right. Hot Seat Cool Throne, let's do it. And then we got Joel McHale coming up and Dungeons & Dragons, which is electric.
Can I just say that Dungeons & Dragons is my favorite game to play?
Yes.
It is.
I'm going to declare this right now. So the week of preceding July 4th, I think the office is closed, right? So we haven't figured out what we're going to do for episodes that week. Usually we run a best of. We should definitely do a just hour-long Dungeons & Dragons.
I'm down.
That we'll put in there.
Turns out your imagination is way better than any video game
yes,
console.
Yes, yes. Okay, let's do it. Hot Seat Cool Throne. Hank, why don't you start?
My hot seat is PFT's boy, his goat, his king, Roy Williams.
Okay.
So Ty Lawson called him out. I mean, everyone knows Roy is, you know, a little bit suspect. It's not surprising. Second best coach in the ACC. Ty Lawson went on Instagram stories to call him out and said, "Who talks shit about someone when you won them a championship? You're weird. I got messages from 10 NBA GMs."
Wait, stop.
You're weird.
That's actually you're weird awesome.
And why are you like, are.
Why are you so weird?
No apostrophe.
I was about to say, yeah, of course it is why are you are, right?
Yep.
I was going to say, weird?
Somebody going on Instagram stories to talk shit about their former coach, weak move. But just dropping a you're weird
you're
on him,
weird, dude.
You don't come back from that. Because like, everyone so knows, weird? Yeah, obviously he's a weirdo. He's a college basketball coach.
And he continued, weird. I got messages from 10 NBA GMs that said it came out your mouth. That's why I don't fuck with Carolina or support anything y'all do. It's a blessing that I don't open my mouth about shit. They ask me why I don't show love to North Carolina. Roy Williams knows why.
Oh, so what'd he do?
What were the GMs?
I don't know, but he's just on the hot seat.
About people saying,
I think there was something with Ty Lawson. Maybe it was Ray Felton.
Like
was
Roy,
it drunk or something?
Roy Williams maybe it was, gave a bad recommendation about Ty
probably
Lawson or something?
He's not a player's guy.
That's fine. Listen, you can keep those words in your dadgum mouth because Roy Williams is still a great coach, best coach in the ACC.
By and the Ty Lawson was putting up Instagram stories from like his Carolina days up until 2016.
Interesting.
So it's somewhat of a recent beef.
Interesting. Okay. You're weird, dude.
You're weird. He is a weirdo. I mean, everyone's a weirdo.
All it takes is one, you know, this is a domino thing, though. It just takes one of these allegations, and then another player comes forward, then another player comes forward. All I'm saying is Roy Williams, he should be feeling some heat underneath mm-hmm. those buns.
Have we already forgotten about the thing
what? All right, and my cool throne,
from Duke?
My
we're
cool throne
from that?
Is Mike. That's just fake news. That's just allegations. My cool throne is Mike Tyson. He's in the airways again. We talked about his movie coming out, the Jamie Foxx impressions, and now there's videos of him training, him fighting, and he apparently has been offered $25 million if he gets back in the ring.
What?
So, cool throne, Mike Tyson, everyone, he's just he's the hotness.
I did see that.
Recurring guest of the show, by the way.
That's right. I saw that he got offered to fight Sonny Bill Williams, the New Zealand rugby player who's also the heavyweight champion of New Zealand. He's like the best athlete in the history of the island, the South Island, I believe.
How many people are in New Zealand?
There's like four. And
he's the toughest.
And the entire Adams family already moved out to Oklahoma City. So Sonny B. Williams is the toughest guy in New Zealand right now.
Yeah.
I would actually watch that fight because you might remember him from the World Cup when he gave his medal to that kid that sprinted onto the field. Everyone remembers that. That was Sonny.
Which World Cup?
The Rugby World Cup.
Big
that classic moment.
No, I'd buy any Mike Tyson fight. I bought the Mike Tyson fights when he was totally washed up and everyone knew he was totally washed up. And it was like, this guy stinks, but he's Mike Tyson. Ooh, if he gets one punch,
they should have
who knows?
Him play in the next match with Evander Holyfield and they have to share a cart.
Perfect. I don't think Mike Tyson he doesn't seem like he's a big golfer. I feel like if you are a pigeon racer, you're not a golfer.
But he lives
like those hobbies.
Doesn't he live in
Nevada? You do one or the other.
I feel like if you live in Las Vegas, you golf.
Oh, they should get OJ on one of them.
Oh, yeah. Great, Hank.
O.J. Simpson.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who's not watching that?
O.J. and Martin.
All right, you guys just got all upset with me. Like, we don't
no.
like.
No, no, you're right. You're right. You're right.
Who's
you're
not
right.
watching
you're
that?
Right.
Who
you're
isn't
right.
watching
put
that?
Put butts in seats.
You're right. I would watch.
In coffins.
I would
it
right.
should be O.J. and Mark Furman.
Sorry, I guess you can't. I'm just throwing out
no,
hypotheticals. You
right.
guys asked me who
you're
would
right.
be a good person
right.
in the match. Tiger Woods and O.J. Simpson as a team?
They should have A.C. driving the golf cart that O.J. has to, like, just hang on the back of.
You're right.
Sorry, I guess.
Cool throw.
Jeez.
Cool throw?
My cool throw
was
Mike
Tyson.
That's actually a great idea, Hank.
No. No,
I don't. He shouldn't get any of the money. I'm anti-OJ
Simpson. It's all for Corona. It would bring awareness to Corona.
I'm anti-murder, and he blocks me on Twitter, so I wouldn't be able to see his banger tweets from it. But I do believe that that would be the highest rated television show of all time.
Yeah.
My hot seat is Rats. Rats. New York City Rats. They're starting to panic. They're turning on each other because all the restaurants are closed down. And there are families and colonies of rats that have been going to the same restaurants over and over for like...
Ratatouille.
For like 12 generations, right, or maybe more of these fucking rat colonies. And now those restaurants are out, so they're turning on each other instead of becoming more aggressive. So now we've got cannibal rats living under the city right now, which... I mean, that's tough for them. Good
Another
for us.
Another thing to worry about.
Well, they don't want to attack us until they've eaten.
Eventually they will.
There will be like five giant rats that have gained all the strength of their entire colony.
Right.
Then we'll have to deal with the giant rats.
I think that's like the start of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it's like the start of like Union
Strike. One of them will be Splinter.
Scabby outside.
One of them will be Splinter.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Good point.
Yeah.
They'll be disciplined rats.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
My cool throne was going to be John Harbaugh because of the new NFL rules, but verbal meme.
Whoa.
PFT steering the car off the exit that now says talk about the NCAA. So Reggie Bush said that college athletes are on the hot seat. So Reggie Bush is on the cool throne. Because he doesn't think that college athletes will be able to handle getting paid and compensated for their image and likeness while they're in college.
Reggie Bush.
Reggie Bush said that. So Reggie Bush has... Well, he would know, right?
He didn't handle it well because he got caught.
That's true.
And he lost his Heisman.
That's true. So he's not even Heisman Trophy winner, Reggie Bush, anymore.
No, he's not. I love when they vacate that shit. Like, he wasn't the best football player in a given year.
Yeah, they just do the men in black.
Like, Louisville didn't win a national title.
Nope.
Just never happened.
Patino got the tattoo.
Yeah, it never happened. All right, my hot seat is my age, and your age too, PFT.
I thought we were 29.
What the fuck is Outer Banks, man? Hank? I started watching it.
It's like,
how is this show?
It's the OC meets National Treasure.
How is this show popular? Is it ironic?
Did you like Big Cat? I mean, it's the OC.
I understand, but I've never felt so old watching this show and this shitty dialogue and these kids run around doing the same shit all the time. Now I got people calling me kooks.
Big time like, kook energy.
That's fine.
Kooks.
Kooks own PFT. Would you rather own two houses, a sick boat, or be running from Child Protective Services all the time?
They both sound pretty good.
Yeah,
but the boat is making me think
I might be a kook too.
Kook. Yeah. I texted Hank a few weeks ago, and I was like, "Hey, tell me about this show, Outer Banks." I thought that it was like a Jersey Shore, except taking place in the Outer Banks.
It would be awesome. It's so bad.
All right, it's pretty bad in the beginning. The middle gets so ridiculous that it becomes interesting, like so bad it gets good, and then the writing at the end of the season is so bad that it's just laughably bad.
Okay, so there is
a point though. There's a few cliffhangers in the middle of the season that are like, I was watching with my girlfriend and I was kind of like sitting there rolling my eyes as I'm watching. But halfway through the season, I got super into it. Was like, oh my god, like what is happening next?
Wait, so you're saying to me though? So my feeling is correct that people are watching it because it's bad.
Well, the hot John B, you know, all the girls love John B.
He's
my girlfriend put up a John B shirt. It's like the highest selling shirt on Barstool the last like 3 months. It's just people are going crazy for John B.
Okay,
and Sarah Cameron.
I like her, but can I? Because she's like 20.
Maybe.
Yeah. It's a little dicey. It's a little 29. Woody Allen-ish.
You're 29.
I don't think I can say I like her.
Yeah.
What's the actress?
Say that
name?
You've heard that the kids like her.
Yeah. I've heard in the show she's like 16.
So
yeah, I think they're seniors in high school.
That's problematic.
Okay. So
the thing, there's a lot of things that are just so absurd, and like I said, the writing towards the end gets even more ridiculous. But the fact that they call the kid John B, they never ever just call him John. It's just John B.
Well, is there another Jonathan?
John B. when he went into the fancy store. They call him Jonathan?
Yeah, Sarah Cameron was like, this is Jonathan.
Jonathan B.
It's so bad.
You guys
PFT.
Don't really...
It's so bad.
You're going to finish it, though.
You
probably.
Don't understand...
Yeah, of course I'm going to fucking finish it. I want to see what happens.
The cultural relevance of the Outer Banks in America, which is everyone who lives in Maryland, Virginia, and North Carolina, they put an OBX bumper sticker on the back
kooks.
Of their
those
car.
Those guys are kooks.
And they,
those
do,
are
they kooks. Do that, Hank, that's because kook, that's the one week out of the year that they get to take off from work.
Oh, no.
They go vacation and kill Devil Hills. Else.
No, pogues are...
We no, want, he's saying there's someone else.
Kooks are the summer people.
Yeah.
No.
The and
people.
The rich,
no,
yes.
There's
yes.
a one-week summer people.
Yeah, the one-week summer people. It's
that's
like
not a kook,
the
Hank.
Dad who like listens
God damn
to
it,
Jimmy
I'm so
Buffett.
Mad that I'm fighting with you about this show.
He listens
that's
to Margaritaville Radio when he's working on spreadsheets every day at the office, and he gets that one week every summer, and he goes to the beach, and that becomes like the
I'm gonna
biggest
get you.
A,
I would die for
life.
John B. shirt, Big Cat. I'm gonna get you all the merch.
Wait, who are the ones that go there for the whole summer?
I will die if I have to watch
the
fucking
snowbirds.
John B. anymore.
Who are they?
No, the kooks live there. They're the rich people who live there.
Okay,
the pogues are the poor people that live there. And then there's a term for the fucking. They said it in the beginning. I don't know. I'm like half watching this. Fuck this fucking show.
So there's no real rich people that live on the Outer Banks year round.
Well. According to this.
Kooks.
Okay, found a plot hole.
Kooks. Fuck, man, I hate this show.
But they got a sick boat.
My cool drone is Jameis Winston because he is practicing football by practicing baseball, and I feel like that's going
to
work.
Yeah, and he was practicing like boxing to practice football earlier with a big scrotum swinging
he's
at him.
He's just in that part of his, he's in that phase of his career where he's going to just do everything that's not football to get better at football because playing football is bad for him.
Well, first, you must learn all the things that are not football to be great at football, right?
Right.
It's like an old kung fu mantra type thing. He's become like the pussy version of James Harrison doing the easiest off-season workouts possible and putting them up on Instagram. That's fine.
I think it's going to work.
That's fine.
I think it's going to work because guess what?
It's the most normal thing that Jameis has done in a long time.
He's not throwing interceptions in practice against no one. Because that's really bad if you throw an interception when no one is guarding your receivers.
Can't throw a pick with a baseball bat.
Right. So I'm in. I think this is going to work for him. All right. Let's get to our interviews. We got Joel McHale coming up, and then we have our Dungeons & Dragons adventure, the continuation of it.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Okay, here he is, Joel McHale. Actually, why don't we start there? So we have Joel McHale on the show, and he has a podcast that we're going to plug, and I want to talk about.
Whoa, you just dropped out for like, was that me? Must have been me.
Hmm. How's your Wi-Fi?
Did you hear it drop out?
Well, you're moving your microphone.
Is it this? Are you, it's not that, because I can hear it.
Are you nervous? Are you nervous to come on Part of My Take?
Well,
and you're stalling right now?
I've had a lot of blood in my urine, and that makes me just go like, I hope everything's okay.
Yes.
I'm taking a lot of hydrocortisone, so.
Yeah.
Ooh. All right, I'm just going to trust it.
Okay, so can you hear us?
Yes.
Joel McHale, always
so Joel's
ready.
Here.
Now, is it Joe? Is it Joe Joel. Or Joel?
Joel, right?
Is it Joe McHale or Joel McHale?
It's Yosef.
Yosef McHale.
Yohale.
Is this, does anything sound any different?
No, you sound like the guy from the soup.
Can you hear us?
Yeah, perfect now. I don't know if it's the headphones or what's going on.
Do you think your name is more like, every time I say your name, it feels like it should be Joe.
I feel like it should be Joe too, but the name is Jewish. And so the name Joel is Jewish. So that makes me very happy.
Got it. McHale, is that Jewish as well?
Yes.
Yeah, Kevin McHale.
It's from
one of the greatest Jewish
basketball
players.
Kevin McHale and
players.
I went to the same synagogue.
Mm-hmm. That's nice. All right. So Joel McHale has joined us. I actually we want to talk about your podcast, but why don't you compliment our podcast first?
You guys have the best bench press in a studio out of any podcast I've ever seen. You clearly have the best supports for a mini fridge I have ever.
Brackets.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Talking, you got a good eye for brackets.
I mean, because who wants to bend down that far?
Right.
Who wants to bend down an extra 4 inches to get a beer out when you can just put it on top of some Bud Light seltzer stuff?
Mm-hmm. There we go. Absolutely. Little plug to our sponsor.
And then
it looks like
there's a poster of Jeremy Renner behind you, but that's not
that's,
him.
That's Coach
Ed Ogeron.
And he
Chris
does look
Berman. Like a movie star.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But then
there's
but I
Coach
will say
yeah.
I like the, it looks like you've like branded the front of the pardon my take. It looks like there should be barbecue equipment in there. I like
that. Oh yeah. This thing. Yeah. Yes. We burned it. We actually just the burned wood. It with kerosene and a torch.
Yes. It's very nice.
And all the cords everywhere. You guys don't give a fuck. Who cares?
Well, the cords. Yeah. That's an aesthetic. Like we're like, you know, when you actually do know this, when you get your hair and makeup and you're like, make it look messy. That's what you do every time you go on TV. Yep. So that's the look we're going for. The make it look messy kind of look.
What is your podcast? I've been doing that with my hair for about 15 years to hide myself going bald.
Mm-hmm. What does your podcast studio look like?
You're looking at it.
Okay.
So this there's cabinets.
There's like a...
You get a handle.
This is where everything. The fun puppets pop out of.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
This is...
Puppet Show Podcast. It's kind of a 1969
tribute to Star Trek. I like to believe this is a model of COVID. So in case I need to, point something out.
There you go. Now, what do you look out at when you're doing the podcast?
I'm in here. I'll show you. I look at a tree.
That's sick.
And there's a TV here.
Oh
yeah. If you give me a tree or a TV option, though, I'm taking the TV.
There's a tree.
Wow. Oh, that's a nice tree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a little deck.
Living the life. Damn.
So you started a podcast, basically. Taking over everyone who's got a podcast for a living like us.
Yes, that's my goal, is to put you guys out of business.
Okay, cool. So The Darkest Timeline is what it's called. Yeah. And it actually is both like a comedic podcast, but also kind of talking about coronavirus and trying to inform the audience, correct?
Yes, because Ken is a real doctor, even though he was sued for malpractice. He broke the world's record for that. And he doesn't like me to point that out, but he really is a doctor. His wife is a practicing doctor. And we were like, hey, let's talk about the virus. And then we'll start bringing on, we knew that community table read was coming up. So we were like, well, we can talk about community and start bringing people on, not watch back the episodes. But then we're just coming, I mean, obviously we're going to run out of community cast members. What do you think we were? Glee? Mm-hmm. Thank you. And so that's how it's kind of gone. We've had like 11 episodes. So
what do we need to know about the coronavirus? Because I actually think that's a fantastic idea solely based on the fact that we go online every day and no one knows what to look for. And it's just noise everywhere and no one seems to have any answers. So do you have some answers for us?
Yeah, no, I think Ken says it best when he says, I was in The Hangover. No, when he says,
remember when everyone saw my dick?
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. I have a poster of that. Mm-hmm. It's actually right in the tree, but it's really important that, if you follow the science, which is hard to find it's actually not that hard to find, but the 24-hour news cycle spreads it out. And the rest of the time it's hard, you know, obviously you need to hear about other things, but there's 100 different labs working on a vaccine. Around the world, and then there's like eight major ones, and they're in United States, Europe, and China. And that one, I think the one in Oxford, it's called the Jenner Corporation. They were already working on a vaccine for SARS, which is a cousin of COVID. So they were already doing phase two trials with people. So they shifted it all over to COVID-19. They say they will have a vaccine by September. That's like hitting four grand slams in Yankee Stadium in the World Series. But they've been working on it for years. Doesn't mean at all that we're going to have it by September. But if in a very, very perfect world, we could have something by January. To actually take that we could get. But now that there's so many billions and billions of dollars and every single lab on the planet is trying to do something, this is when, you know, the human race does things extraordinary. And so if you had said 100 years before, I don't know, 1970, that, oh, no, we're going to fight two wars on two different fronts at the same time and win and develop nuclear bombs and go to the moon and back a couple times, people would look at you like you were nuts. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think we can underestimate the power of, you know, human brains working together. And at the same time, we should definitely not go, oh, it's going to be fine. There's no problem here. And so, because those phases, those trials take a long time. They have to see for a long time whether it's going to accidentally kill people. Because you can take a vaccine and then a year later, something could happen.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Yeah. And also the virus is still, we really don't know. They think it's soft droplets, which is just talking between people inside rooms. And then they think it's the hard droplets, which are on surfaces. But they still, they don't know about how contagious you are. They don't know about the viral loads and how much more contagious that makes you. They're getting there, but we've been blindsided by this thing. So anyway, that's
a little positivity though. I like that message.
You should definitely be positive because there are so many people working on it.
When I hear September, I just hear football. That just translates directly into football for me. So as first reported by Joel McHale, the NFL and NCAA season will happen on schedule.
I pretty guarantee almost any outdoor sport is probably going to be able to be played. I bet.
Yes.
Okay.
By September, there should be more uniform and easier ways to test quickly. Should be. Obviously, the demand is off the charts for quick testing, so they can test all those players before they go in. The only thing I would be worried for the players because they're not getting the same sort of practice schedule as they would before a regular season.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you guys know something, I don't know. I mean, no. Are they going to practice every day? I mean, it's not.
I think Tom Brady is. Tom Brady just like snuck a bunch of his teammates out in the trunk of his car to like a Tampa high school and threw the ball around to him today. So I think some teams are going to, depending on what state you're in, like Florida's opening up more stuff.
Mid-June, I think the NFL said basically they're going to let any state that allows it to open up their facilities.
Hmm.
So
are you worried at all about the Seahawks? What would be a disaster is if the people they obviously just need to be very careful. They should sequester them probably. They should be like, if you don't have it, they should just put you in a hotel and bring you from the hotel to the practice facility and back. And that's it. Because if someone gets it, it's going to spread and it spreads through wildfire on a team. They're going to shut the whole thing down.
Right. Yeah. Right. Are you worried at all about the Seahawks not being able to like pump in fake crowd noise?
No, I'm okay with that. Did you see what the coach of the San Diego Chargers said?
No.
And he
nothing
they
because
him, they were like
they're in Los Angeles.
No,
they
were like, I like that you said San Diego. I still say San Diego.
Yeah, yeah. I do too. Yes.
What
it just
say?
Doesn't make any sense. I'm only going to say the Carson Chargers.
Yeah.
But what do you think of the prospect of playing games without fans? And he goes, we're doing that already.
Right.
Perfect.
And
yeah.
I was like, that's pretty good. Yes. But I'm not too worried. Those guys compete at such a high level and they're the best athlete in their state by a mile. Like when they were coming up most of those guys, I would say they don't have any problem with being motivated out there.
True.
I just watched all those MMA fights on Saturday night with no audience and it actually didn't bother me at all. And I assume it'll be the same for football and they'll find creative ways. If that's the most we got to worry about, then we're in good shape.
Totally.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. So I read that you were a walk-on tight end at the University of Washington. UW were a Husky. Did you ever get into a game?
No, terrible. The first year, cause I played 1 year of high school football and then I was a rower. I was recruited to row at the University of Washington. And talk about a COVID-like audience. Nobody watches rowing. And my theory is that to make up for that, at least at the University of Washington, they used hazing and rituals to make themselves feel important. So the freshman year, if you got into the freshman boat, the good boat, they would shave your head and your eyebrows off and then of the whole team and then put all that hair into a pillow, which then would go into a display case with other hair pillows, which is not morbid or serial killer at all. Like, and then I didn't push a chair in properly and the seniors surrounded me and another freshman, and they beat us up. And I was like, this is great. What a fun, fun time college is. And so I was like, fuck this. And I had a couple of friends on the football team. And I don't know why I did it, but they were just like, come out for football. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do that. And 2 years later, and after I had such a good time, I was not nearly very good compared to, I mean, Mark Bruner and Ernie Conwell were the tight ends in front of me. They were on, they were, you know, the best, they were some of the best athletes I'd ever seen on in my life. So they redshirted me my second year in hopes I would get, like, they're like, all right, he's gotten good to a point where we're going to hold on to him. But then after that, I was like, I want to be an actor. So I left, but I still know a couple of the guys, and they're terrific.
Did you, I saw the picture online. It looked like it was in front of the Rose Bowl. Did you get to be on the sideline for a Rose Bowl?
Well, I was near the sideline. I was in a chair
okay.
with the other players who
that
they
counts.
Won't, because I was wearing the jersey without the pads, so it looked like I was injured, which I pretended I was. I was just limp around the Rose Bowl. They're like, why aren't you in? I'm like, you know, calf.
Yeah.
And so, no, it was so much fun. And watching, like, Napoleon Kaufman run, like Olympic speeds down the field was pretty wonderful. Mm-hmm. He was one of the scariest athletes I'd ever seen. Next to Ernie Conwell, who was 21 years old. He was benching 550, squatting 850. Jesus. He was clean and jerking 365 and running a 4.5 40-yard dash.
It's pretty
as
impressive.
A 21-year-old.
That's pretty impressive. And then after you got on the football team, I guess that's like totally alphaing the rowing team, because then they have to row people from their boats to your game on Saturday.
Yeah. Yeah, that's partial reason why I did it, just for their taxi service.
I like that.
If anybody's been to the University of Washington, you can pull a boat up to the stadium. I think it's the most picturesque stadium in all of college football.
I love watching games on TV from Washington, but the camera angles, both for football and basketball, are the weirdest camera angles ever. The basketball camera angle when you're watching a Washington Huskies game is insane. I don't understand how. I'm a degenerate gambler, so I like, these are the weird things that I notice and I stick in my head, but something about that camera angle, they have not quite figured. I think it's too low. And then the football camera angle's cool because when the crowd gets really loud, it shakes, and I love that. That's like true Saturday afternoon college football.
I didn't even know the basketball thing. They
yes.
should fix that, because maybe that should, that sometimes they figured out how to shoot football and basketball games, and they don't need to mess with it.
It drives me nuts. So maybe can you get on that? Like, are you part of the alumni board or something?
Yeah, no, I'm part of the alumni camera angle board, and I will.
Perfect.
It's better than it used to be, because basketball at UW was very, it became very unpopular for a while, and they never updated the stadium. And so it was the old stadium that had all the girders, you know, all the supports.
Yeah.
And so the camera would just, you just see a big support go by as the camera was following the action. I was like, what's happening? It was like Wrigley Field in 1933. So
yeah. Yeah.
It's all better.
I saw you do the Tiger King. What was it? After the King and I? Is that what it was called?
Yeah, you kind of look like one of those
guys. Post-documentary.
I
feel like one of those guys. I feel like that's what I was destined to be in a different life. But Carol was not on that show. Did you actually get
I don't. I don't think Carol's going to ever agree to do anything for Netflix again.
Yeah? Ooh. She's so pissed off about that?
Wouldn't you be?
Well,
I mean, it. If I was anybody on that show, I'd probably be pissed off, be like, wow, I really ended up looking like a piece of shit.
I think some, like, with
Saf,
Carol specifically.
Saf looked good. Saf was, like, the only person.
Saf looked pretty good. And then the guy that was his campaign manager. And then, you know, Jeff Lowe, even though you can tell, like, every time he said, yeah, I get into business with people and it always ends badly. And I'm mm-hmm. like, that might be you.
Mm-hmm.
But they're. And when I interviewed them, I'm like, well, they seem like nice folks, but then cut to him in jail.
Yes.
So I don't with Carol, you know, obviously the documentary as it portrays her is not good. I mean, she comes out looking not great, obviously. And then her husband, who, you know, with the leashes and all that at their wedding.
Uh-huh.
Which was, I was like, oh, this guy, this dude, that, okay.
St. Paul
this
fan.
Is a different. Yeah. But he put out a 10-minute video defending themselves. And in the video, he goes, we were tricked. We were told it was going to be this thing about Tigers and they did this. And then they went down this path that we didn't know what they were doing. Absolutely, they were tricked. I could not agree with him more. But they do not really talk about what happened to her ex-husband. Because if a relationship goes bad and somebody leaves, you hear from that person again in your life, or you hear about them. Even if that person says, if I can escape, if I can get out of here and get to Costa Rica, then I can just disappear forever. If he even said that and was alive, you'd still hear about the dude.
Right.
If the white dude shows up in Costa Rica with a bunch of money, you hear about that thing. We would have heard from him by now. So something happened. And then the way his family, you know, was talking about her, it, again, was not great.
It's bizarre, though, to be, I don't know if she was ever officially a suspect, but clearly there's something there where her husband died and disappeared or whatever happened. It's weird to do a documentary and be like, I was tricked. I can't believe they brought up the time that people think I killed my husband. You'd think that if you agreed to do the documentary, you'd have to assume that was going to be brought up.
And she talked about it. Like when she said, well, I guess in Florida, the rule is at the time, if you don't hear from someone from 5 years, they're declared legally dead. And then on 5 years and one day, she got the money.
Yep.
And then they asked her, was there a funeral? And she basically just said, no, I pointed and looked into the sky. And then some time passed. And then the day was over. And I was like, that's the funeral?
Yeah. I some time passed and I was rich and I went to the bank and got a lot of cash out in his honor. Like that's such a Florida law that if you don't hear from somebody for 5 years, it's like, okay, they're dead.
Yeah.
We just assume that they totally disappeared. But yeah.
But as we would always say, it is Florida. So.
Right. Right. I mean, and were you surprised by the backlash that you got for some of your questions? I think that was when you asked like, hey, Joe Exotic probably should be in jail. And people are like, what? We love Joe Exotic. Like, no.
Yeah, people are like, how dare you for asking that question about that guy we've been making fun of for the last few weeks? I'm supposed to be the one that makes fun. Yes, I did not. I honestly can tell sometimes when I say something or screw up something and I'm like, oh, I'm coming off as a dick and now I'll probably get some shit for this. But that, I just asked them, I was like, do you think he should be in jail? That was the as hard hitting as my question was of a guy who's in jail, and 19 felonies is not a small number of felonies.
No.
And then everybody, including Saf, was like, everyone said, yes, he should be in jail. And then when Saf, he said like, oh, I had a great experience and I have no problem with Joe. We got along great. And then I said, do you think he should be in jail? And Saf said, absolutely.
Right.
So I was letting them speak. I wasn't going, so Joe should be in jail, huh? Am I right? Please agree with me. Yeah, it was very odd. It's an odd backlash.
Did you get any closer to the truth of why James Garrison was working for the FBI? Like what exactly they had on him? Because it can't be the lemur sale thing, right?
No, we asked him to come on and he refused. Hmm. So, he's the guy, the redhead who went off into the distance on the jet ski.
The jet ski, yeah.
Doing Eye of the Tiger.
Love that guy.
He refused to, they asked him a number of times to be on it. And I think his last text was just stop.
Cause I need to know what the FBI had on him. Cause it has to be something more than like the paperwork was wrong on this one ring-tailed lemur, because this guy was like wearing wires, putting his life online every single day. And I'm sure whatever crime he was committing was absolutely hilarious to get entrapped in that.
I would agree. But you never know when people, like when the FBI shows up to your house and says, we have this on you, you never know how people might react. And some people might have a mountain of evidence and say, no, I'm not agreeing. And other people might hear one thing and go, oh, I probably have other things and I'll do anything I can to get out of it. I don't know. It's a good question.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
I read an article where you said that when you first saw the script for Community, you would cut off your pinky to be a part of it. Would you have actually done that? Because I have made some pinky bets in my life as well.
Yeah, I cut it off. We used a prosthetic throughout the whole thing. So, I would have cut off not my own pinky, someone else's.
Someone's
and mailed
pinky.
It. Yeah, someone's and mailed it to Dan. But it was one of the best scripts that I've ever, it was the best pilot script I'd ever really read. And it was one of those ones where I thought, oh, I think I can play this character. And I did the world of getting a pilot is so crazy that you can, unless you're a gigantic star at the time, there's too many factors that go into trying to get the role. And I was still a baby when I was in contention for it. And I'm very lucky because Joe Russo and Anthony Russo and Dan they all wanted me. And so despite, you know, like network concerns and studio concerns, and it goes on and on. It's all garbly good, I would do it all over again as well.
Is it when you're part of something like that and you know it's special while you're part of it, is it weird to have it end and be like, I may never have that again in my life? Like that might have been the peak. Not saying that is your peak, but that might have been the peak of enjoyable and success.
Yeah, I mean, for the difficult task of, first of all, getting a pilot, which is still to this day for me difficult to get. I mean, it's not just, oh, here's another pilot. Go. I mean, there's also a lot of crap out there, but to get a pilot, to actually get it picked up, then to actually be on the air, then to get out of your first season and get picked up for a second season again is like hitting two hole in ones in a row. And so we knew the scripts were great, and I was always so happy when I would read them, because I have been at many table reads where scripts are a mess and you read it on like a Monday and you realize you're going to be shooting in a week. And then you go, oh no, they have so much work to do on this thing. And that just never was the case with anything for Community except for season 4. And so we all really liked each other. We got along great. And that, if you guys watched any of that Community table reader, we are on a text chain, and we still talk to each other. And that is not the way that it, from what I understand, how it usually goes. But the other way it happens is, like, I've been in movies where you have this beginning, middle, and ending, like, oh, this 3 months is going to be with this small family and it's really great. And then it's over. Whereas Community was 6 years.
Yeah, when you were auditioning for that, was there any additional pressure on yourself? Were you nervous in that, like more nervous than you usually would be because you liked it so much?
The really intimidating time, like when I was with Joe and Anthony and Dan, the creator, I was not nervous because those guys had my back. And they kind of said, you're the guy. Now we're just going to work with you. And that was great. So I didn't have that pressure. When you get into these network tests, which are the worst, again, this is inside baseball stuff, but it's the worst way to audition for anything, because you're auditioning in someone's office at like NBC or CBS. And there's 15 executives that are taking a break from their lunch so they can watch some actor in their friend's office act with a couple other actors. And it's totally unnatural. It would be like you guys doing your show from, I don't know, like 50 feet below in cold water. So you'd have to figure it. But anyway, it's just a terrible place. So the first time I read in front of all those executives and there's four other guys that are going up for the role that are all sitting in the hallway, you go up, you do it. So then they came out to me and they said, okay, so you did not get it. And I'm like, oh no. And then they like, so come back in, we're going to put you on tape. And then we're going to show them the tape. And then, so that next day I finally got the word that I had gotten it, but I sat in that fucking room and then they're like, yep, sorry. I got to a point where with network tests, cause I had done a couple of them, I'd walk in and see all the executives and be like, boy, you guys gain weight fast. And so I would just have to insult them somehow, or I'd be like, fuck this. And, you know, I'd have to kind of undercut them to make myself feel better about what was about to happen.
Is there ever mind games or shit talking in the hallway with the other people that are going for a role?
I have never experienced that. I heard people do that. I knew a guy that got super high while he was waiting, or he showed up high to relax himself, and then he became very hungry. Then he went, and the thing was, because these things can take 10 hours sometimes. And so he was eating constantly. And I think they told him one of the reasons why he got the role, because it was like, we kept coming out and you just kept eating. And it was like for the role of someone like an Italian family, like that's what my family's like. So he got the role. And that person played Don Corleone. That's right.
I love it. That's how Marlon Brando spent like the last 20 years of his life. Yeah. When you were auditioning for Ted, was Mark Wahlberg just like, hey, take your shirt off, let's play some basketball?
I did not have to audition for Ted. That was a blessing. And, cause I rarely get things just out of auditioning. It's always like a friend of a friend, but, no, I did see him. I met him. We did like a reading in Boston, and that was the first time I saw him up close. And I was like, dear Lord, how was your workout? And, he really is he looks like, I don't know. He looks like Schwarzenegger, and I'm a big guy. And I'm like, dear Lord, what is your arms routine, my friend? So it's very intimidating. He's a very nice guy, though.
What was harder, hosting the White House Correspondent Dinner or the ESPYs?
Oh, the White House Correspondent Dinner.
Really?
By a mile. Oh, yeah. Because the ESPYs, when you really look at it, I mean, the ESPYs has all sorts of pressure and all 1,000 different things to think about. But when it really comes down to it, it's 5 minutes of jokes at the top. And that's what they really base it on. Like that's the kind of like the moment where you're like, that's where everything has to work for the rest of the show to go okay. So that's an intense pressure. That first 5 minutes, like you got to really nail that and make sure the jokes are good. Whereas the White House Correspondents' Dinner is a whole other, that's almost 20 minutes of straight jokes. Plus you've got the president opening for you.
Mm-hmm.
And Obama was a very, very good joke teller and he worked on it. So it was, you knew you were going up against somebody who was very, very good. And you're in a room with people. First of all, the first few rows look like a wax museum of famous people. You're like, why is Andrew Luck sitting next to De Niro? There's Russell Wilson, and there's, you know, there'd be like Warren Beatty and his wife. So so it's very odd. And then it's full of Democrats and Republicans. So when you tell a Democrat joke, the Republicans laugh, but they don't laugh too hard because they don't want to seem like they're too. And then the same thing. So everyone's reaction when it's somewhat edgy is just, ooh, and that's really a great way to do comedy. So I just pretend, I was like, you guys sound like you're on a roller coaster. And so that was, I don't think I've ever been more nervous, and I have never been nervous since. So
really,
as far as that level, I think I burnt out that, like when I did the ESPYs, I was like, oh, I'm not really nervous. Cause I burnt out that fuse, that wire that was connecting. Cause I was like, I went swimming with sharks with the Discovery Channel last year. And they were nervous about every actor being nervous. And I was like, don't worry, it's not gonna, I don't have it anymore. I've lost that ability. And so I'd be nervous if I had to like say a poem at a wedding where these people are getting married or something. And I didn't want to screw that up because it's a one-time thing. But I've not been nervous since. But yeah, that's the most, Also, it's the days leading up to the White House because you're doing all these interviews. Then you go meet the president. You're doing all this stuff. And the last thing you're doing is preparing your jokes. So anyway, I just talked for a long time and I'd like to apologize.
No.
It got on so long that a foot has appeared in the shot and then just disappeared.
Yeah, that's our producer, Hank. I always the reason I ask is because the ESPYs always seem like a hard gig because you have to make fun of people that aren't like in on the athletes don't get made fun of. And also you're on ESPN, so you can't really be edgy and you have to like, it has to be kind of family friendly. So I always thought that was a very hard thing to walk that line of being funny and entertaining, but also under all these restrictions that most stand-up comedians or hosts don't have.
Yeah. No, I would agree with that. And I was told by, I think I asked Rob Riggle, who had hosted it. I was like, tell me about it. He's like, don't worry about the first 10 rows. Because as you said, like he's like, it's just a bunch of athletes. They're all wearing sunglasses and they're all hyper competitive.
Right.
And you're like you said, they're not necessarily the fun, the have a sense of humor. So he's like, don't worry about them. Worry about everybody behind them. And we put in a couple jokes that worked. Like we said, Steph Curry is here tonight. And we had hired a 10-year-old boy to sit in his seat, in a seat, because he's so much smaller than everybody in the NBA. And they were like, and Coach Steve Kerr is right behind him. And then it was like another redheaded 10-year-old boy behind him. So that worked in the audience and that kind of broke the ice. But that was good times.
I
would do it again.
I actually wrote jokes for that monologue, for that ESPY show.
Oh, did I use some?
No. So I actually watched it last night because I thought that you used some. I was overseas when the show actually happened, so I didn't get to watch it live. And somebody told me that you had used one of my jokes. I can't believe that you turned down this great one right here. Hey, the Houston Texans are on Hard Knocks this year. That's what America needs, a Rocky-style montage of J.J. Watt catching fish in an icy river with his dick and flipping 100-pound tractor tires using only his positive attitude. And then I made a joke about...
Where was the joke?
That was the joke. I sped through it to ignore the punchline. And then
I like it how it has two punchlines. There's a punchline. There's an unusable punchline in the middle of the joke.
Uh-huh.
And then you end kind of...
Well, all of mine
peter out at the end.
All of my jokes, I'm looking through them right now, were completely unusable for a Disney audience. Like, there was this one. It was right after when Chip Kelly got accused of being racist by LaShawn McCoy. So it was like, I was like, hey, Chip Kelly, if he only liked white people, how come he chose football as his profession? That's like if Rex Ryan quit the Bills to coach Oscar Pistorius. So little foot joke there from the double amputee.
Yeah.
That one didn't make
it. Well, and a guy who shot and killed his wife and at that point it was very recently.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
fresh
again,
on everyone's mind. But that's when it kills, no pun intended, but that's when it kills because everyone remembers it.
You know, those are really great jokes.
Thank you.
And I'll definitely think about them for the future. Okay. Why were you overseas? You sounded like you were
in the
service?
I
was serving.
Mm-hmm. So you were serving and submitting jokes?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I was doing multiple things. I was not serving. That's stolen valor, Big Cat just entrapped me into doing.
He was just high in Amsterdam.
I was getting drunk in Barcelona.
Barcelona.
Oh, that sounds
about the same as serving in the military.
Yeah. Well, thank you for your service.
Thank you. Happy to do it.
That's big time.
It worked out.
It did.
You
God
got
bless
out and,
the broken road.
Yeah, I have a question about the soup, which I love.
Yes.
What when you guys put together that show every week, would you watch the shows, or would you have someone? Would there be a whole staff that watched it then gave you like the best of, like, here's what we're doing, or would you participate in weeding through all the clips?
Well, when we first started the show, there was only six of us total, and we had to watch basically every hour of television on every channel that we could all do. So when I first started, it was all the time watching television, to the point where my wife was like, you need to stop watching Extreme Makeover Home Edition. It's going to kill you. And I was like, no, I just have to watch one more. And then as things started working and we could hire more people, we could delegate, the different shows. And that took the pressure off me and a couple of the writers. But yes, we would come together into a room and select clips. Everyone would bring clips. And you had to bring like, I don't know, like 10 clips. It was always between like people would bring like 2 and 10 clips a meeting. And the meetings were every day. And we would just select every day. And as we got closer to showtime, we would get rid of a bunch and then new ones would show up. And then when Community hit, I basically had no time to watch anything because our hours were nuts. So the producers would come to my trailer at Paramount with laptops and show me the clips. And we'd go through the scripts in between setups for Communities because I had no time. I tried to keep up with what was happening, like with The Bachelor, Bachelorette or something. But yeah, that was we had VCRs when that began.
Oh man.
So we had just mountains of VCR tapes trying to keep track of everything.
So I asked that because I think you need to donate your brain to science because what reality television does to our brains is fascinating to me. And you would be a great case study. Like, hey, this is how we're, I actually think we started as bloggers and we have something similar where we've lived on the internet for right. so many years and consumed so much internet that our brains have been warped and poisoned to a point where there's no coming back from it. I think you have something right. similar with TV.
I would agree.
Have you noticed that? Like, have you ever noticed something happen and you're like, oh yeah, I'm completely jaded or this is fake or.
Yeah,
like I can't watch this anymore because I know how it's made.
Yeah, no, it's difficult. I never, and they're wildly popular, all the Housewives shows. Mm-hmm. And even the Kardashians, who actually are really nice people. But that stuff's all scripted out. And it's all planned. There's not like where there, no one goes, well, let's go to Nobu for lunch. Oh my gosh, there's my arch enemy. I cannot believe they're here.
Hold on. Are you saying that
Kris Jenner,
she's
scripting this stuff out?
Wait.
She has a plan?
You're telling me that on The Housewives, when they do that one episode every year where they all go on vacation together and get really drunk and get in a big fight, that's planned?
I hate to... It sounded like you said you had a very like savvy, jaded mind, but I hate to tell you this. It's planned, dude. I just never... Well, what I didn't get, I was like, why doesn't everyone else see this? Why doesn't everyone else... Does no one care? And I think that same thing kind of happened in reverse with Tiger King, where people kept going, aren't these characters funny? And I was like, they're people.
Right.
I
think that's why we love reality television, because we get to watch it and say, oh, well, at least we're not them. At least we're not drunk fighting, right. you know, in the Hamptons every summer, or at least we don't own these tigers and kill our, you know, husband and all this stuff. Like we judge ourselves, like we could be shitty people, but we're not that.
I think there's two different. Yeah, there's the. I'm glad I'm not. I'm glad I'm not on. Like, I'm glad I'm not Flava Flav on that crazy show he was on or whatever. Like, isn't this a constant train wreck? And then there's the aspirational ones, like the Kardashians, where they go, I wish I had that life.
Right.
So I think there's two versions, and I think the Housewives is in the, oh, they're so rich and crazy that. Boy, it's a crazy world and it's kind of fun. And so I think there is an element of like, oh, well, I would never do that. But people love it. And I don't like, but again, going back to Tiger King, I was like, people like, isn't it funny, all those characters? And I was like, that character had their arm eaten off.
Yes,
for
yes,
real.
Yes.
That was not this is not a Game of Thrones episode. So that Saf really had his arm eaten off. So that's what. So I believe my brain. Yes, I agree. My brain's real.
Mm-hmm. So, but for the record, the Kardashians, is there any part of it that's real? Some of that stuff's got to be real.
I think there is a very set plan and then some real things happen.
And then Kanye gets too high and fucks everything up. And then they have to like adjust on the fly.
How much is Kanye in it?
Not much.
Yeah, I think
I think the ripple effects from Kanye probably exist in it at some times when he just he can mess up some plans. I'll tell you that much.
I'm sure. Yes, if anybody does, it would be him.
Mm-hmm. I had one last ESPYs question. When you hosted, did LeBron make you run all your jokes about him by him before ESPN would let it go on the air?
No, we didn't. I never even met him at the.
What's that red dot on your forehead right now?
What the? Oh, this? No. Well, that's a laser. I mean, it's okay. A different.
Got it.
Yeah, no, I didn't have to do. No, I didn't have to run my jokes by any athletes. So I'm sure some of them weren't happy with them, but but they were nice.
But if you did, it probably would have been LeBron.
Probably.
There it is. We got him.
I don't know.
We got him.
Or Oscar Pistorius.
Let's just say, I ran all my
probably
jokes by LeBron.
Probably want to run one by
him,
too.
Yes. Well, this has been awesome, Joel. We really appreciate it. The Darkest Timeline, you can go listen. Who do you have on this week since you're taking our job in podcasting?
Oh, well, this week we made it part of the podcast, but the community table read.
Okay.
And then it looks like we're going to get Pedro Pascal, who was in the community table read, who's also the Mandalorian.
So I can't
confirm it because Ken and I are booking it. So it's not, we have a tentative plan. So that could fall through.
A little podcasting tip for you. You always ask that, like, who do you have on this week? And then we're going to hold this interview for a month to make you look like a fool.
Oh, well played.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's well what played. You're walking on now to our turn. You're addicted to walking on places.
Yeah. Also, a little podcasting trick for you. When I do other podcasts, I always bring an ad with me. Start bringing an ad with you.
Oh, you mean like Bud Light Seltzer?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you have an ad, just throw out your own promo takes. And that way you get, it just carries over.
All right.
These are tricks of the trade. If you have any other questions, we can answer them for you real quick.
That'd
be awesome at podcasting.
Donnie's Gerbil Supply in Van Nuys, California is one of my favorite Gerbil Supply.
You and Richard
Gere.
Yeah,
it's a big Hollywood thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, where everybody puts
you
them
there. You got a favorite pizza shop that you go eat pizza at too?
LBK Pizza in Studio City is the best pizza on the planet from Brooklyn all the way to here. Where are you guys located right now?
New York.
Manhattan.
And how is it there?
What awesome. Is it like?
It's great if you don't like things.
Yeah. If you like nobody in... Actually, if you like no one in the city of New York, it is awesome, which I do like nobody in the city of New York.
Oh, how fast could I drive up Fifth Avenue right now?
Very fast. I live in Brooklyn and I drive and it takes me 12 minutes to get into basically Madison Square Garden.
And that took you how long before?
35.
Like right now where I sit, same thing, to get to downtown LA right now, if I left pre-COVID, 40 minutes, and now it's 11.
That's crazy.
Wow. How's the 405?
It is a runway. It is wide open.
That's
nice.
Nuts.
Nice.
I have a pretty fast sports car, and I have been pushing it. The cops have just started showing up again, so I can't push it the way I used to, but it was really fun out there for a moment.
Yeah, here it's like Mad Max. You don't even have to pay attention to stoplights. It's pretty sweet right now.
I know it's been really rough in New York and a lot of people got sick and all that. But when I think about all those closed restaurants, it just makes me so sad.
Yes, yes. We'll get back though. And you could listen to Joel McHale, The Darkest Timeline, for some positivity.
For some positivity and science.
Yes. Thank you, Joel. We really appreciate it, man.
Thanks for having me, you guys. Really, you guys are very nice.
Yeah. Oh, wow. And nice.
Very thoughtful.
Nice.
Thank you, Joel.
And who's next on your show?
We have the Undertaker. Do you have any questions for the Undertaker?
He must be very busy.
Yeah.
Listen up, we've got some tea and you all are going to be obsessed. We spoke with the Abercrombie team and they told us that they were going to launch a wedding shop. Well, we lost it because, as you know, we are both getting ready to get Abercrombie and hitched. The whole vibe of Abercrombie these days is clothes you'd wear for a perfect long weekend, and all their customers were like, hey, we spend long weekends traveling for weddings these days. And then Abercrombie was like, we love that. Let us just give you everything you could ever possibly want and love to wear for all things wedding. So they did. It has everything. Tons of dresses, jumpsuits, pants, swimsuits, pajamas, pantsuits, and all perfectly curated for different events, bachelorettes, brunches, showers, ceremonies as a guest and ceremonies as a bride, reception, and even honeymoon. It is incredible. Check out the Abercrombie Wedding Shop on Abercrombie.com. Go shop it now.
And now, Dungeons and Dragons.
Okay, it is that time. Every 2 weeks, we are picking up our Dungeons & Dragons campaign with our Dungeon Master, Tim Woods, the fantastic Tim Woods. Tim?
Hey, how's it going?
Great to have you back. I think that, let's just say that not only do our listeners, but I'd say ourselves as well, we need a recap of what's going on.
Absolutely.
So pretend like we know, but no one else knows. So explain it to the people, because we obviously know who we are, right?
Well, for sure, of course. As your Dungeon Master in Dungeons & Dragons, part of what I always do is a little bit of a recap to get us started. And last time we had gotten our adventure off to a great foot because we had made it into the town of Greenest, where our caravan that we were all guarding had kind of been pulling up to, only to discover that the village of Greenest was under attack. And we have arrived just in time to do something if we choose. And we were really on the fence, getting ready to decide at the end of last time exactly to what degree we were going to help this poor village that is currently, by all accounts, being attacked by these red-robed cultists that we have positively identified as the Cult of the Dragon, a kind of obsessive group of dragon-worshipping cultists that have apparently attacked this town with all of their 200 kobold minions. And all of our adventuring party here, which consists of Norm the Barbarian, Wayne, our dwarven bard, Erlich, our gnome warlock, and Berserker Billy, the Goliath cleric, a war priest, as I believe we had established last time.
Nice.
And after pulling into the village, we had discovered not only was it under attack, we had run into a group in a barn of four kobolds. And after eliminating very quickly and easily three of the kobolds, the final kobold we had gotten to surrender to us, and he warned us, this kobold who we have been kind of going between different names for, we have named him alternatively Reek, Bob Costas, and in theory, he's got a name, he just hasn't told us his
Bob
name.
Bob Costas, yet. Yeah.
We could always ask if we care.
But, no, I like Bob Costas, he's short. Yeah. Wait, and so we ate the other ones, right? We ate them?
In theory, we've got them ready to go. It's up to us whether we're making a campfire next door, whether we're heading to something maybe more urgent. Since the town is under attack at the moment, we could decide that laying low and making a campfire and resting while the town continues to get attacked is something we could do. But now with Reek or Bob as our minion, kind of having warned us that not only is this cult showed up here in force, they are here for the money that they can squeeze out of this village. And they've also, we figured out, they have brought something big with them, something they call the Cyan Wrath. And at this point, looking out from the barn, we'd be aware of two things. We'd be looking and we'd be seeing that there's the castle, the little keep up on a hill that's at the centerpiece of this village. And it does seem like there are cultists maybe starting to gather around that castle. We're also hearing screams from a temple kind of on the outskirts of town, a little country temple by the river that looks like it is surrounded and smoke is rising from it. But there's many screams coming from that temple as well. So that's a kind of our recap of what's happened in our adventure and what's going on right now. We're looking out of a barn, but we can do whatever we want.
Wait, one little point here. Bob Costas, didn't he tell us something important right before we stopped?
Mm-hmm.
What did he tell us?
He had warned us that when he was taking orders from the cult, he had warned us the cult's plans were to follow the orders of their high priestess, Frulem Mondath, and gather around the castle.
That's right.
But since we're his friends, he said we should run, for they have brought a monster, a great and terrible
sounds
enemy.
Like a dragon.
Called the Cyan
Wrath. We should
only
let Bob Costas talk to us during his like little halftime soliloquies during battles. He gets to break in for five minutes. Yeah.
As the war priest, I think I have to do a little ritual with Bob Costas.
What do you mean?
Do you want to haze him?
Yes.
His loyalty?
Can we update his his abilities by doing some rituals, like upgrade him?
What I want to let you do, War Priest, is first of all, you know that some of the magic you have at your disposal does boost people. You could give him guidance, which would give him a little boost on his next skill check, but I'll let you roll the die right now, and we'll add your religion bonus, which would be like a plus
protect
two.
Him against
if you
Peter.
Roll really well, maybe Bob will be feeling even more impressive.
So okay. I'm going to roll this.
Billy has cast a 10.
Sweet.
You got a 10, and you add a plus 2 to that. With a 12, he's looking really invigorated. He says, all of the prayers to your Goliath war god that you would be saying. But he doesn't seem like he's any boosted. He's not more proficient. He waves his dagger and then he drops it. He goes, one second.
All right, so you failed, Billy.
No, you failed.
You failed. All right, so what are we, Tim, what are our options right now? What can we do?
Absolutely. We could start heading towards the castle where it looks like cultists are heading. And Bob had let us know that that does seem like it's their goal in the end. There's also that temple that looks like it was surrounded where there were like screams coming from there. We could also like interrogate Bob some more, get some more answers out of him.
I feel like we
need
to make a move
right now.
I feel like it's enough talk.
Let's push the temple. Let's push.
You want to go temple?
You want to go to the temple?
Let's push.
You don't want to go to the castle and see the dragon?
I think we go castle and say, fuck this shit up.
There's a dragon right there, man.
Play toxic?
Yeah. All right, let's go to the castle. Let's go to the castle.
Where's the Scion Wrath? Do we know what that is?
Bob will very quickly say, if you're saying this out loud, he says, ugh, going to be by castle soon. And he's kind of looking like he's expecting the Scion Wrath to be there anyway.
Yo, I'm about that
like a
action.
Shitty car.
Yeah, let's I want that action. Let's go to the castle.
Absolutely, for sure. Now, as we start to head in the direction of the castle,
what if some of us don't want to go to the castle and there's a fight between us?
Do you want
to
kill Hank? Hank seems like
can
he's
we kill Hank
up right now?
No, I won't. I'm not gonna kill.
I'm just
Hank.
But
he's already talking about deserting.
I'm just curious how it would go if there was we all didn't agree we wanted to go to the castle.
What's the options? It would be a real shame if you were to try to leave us right now.
All
right,
Tim.
I'm not saying I want to. I'm just curious. All right,
shut up. Let Tim say.
I'd say this, some parties like put it up to a vote or have some kind of agreement, but at the same time, you can always split the party and go in different directions if you want to. But I would say it's traditionally held in Dungeons & Dragons that that's a risky thing to do. You never to work together, but it's usually better to work together.
I'll tell you what, Hank, if you want to leave, if that's something that you think is a good thing to do,
stay.
Then by all
the
means.
Castle. I was just curious.
Okay, we're going to the castle.
I want to fucking kill you right now. You're being a bitch. I want to kill you in real life and in Dungeons and Dragons.
All right.
Sometimes one person wants to go in one direction can be like, I'm actually going to go scout that out while you all do that. And like, I'll rejoin you at some point. And maybe they have their own motives for going off and checking that temple out.
No, I'm rolling with. Just remember.
Remember this, PFT.
It's in my memory right now. Before we go to the castle, real quick question. Do we have any sort of distance weapon with us? Like, if we were to send our little Bob Costas guy and have him spy on somebody, can we also monitor him and shoot him if he tries to defect?
Yes, we would have many ranged options at our availability for eliminating Bob should he look like he's going to betray us at any moment. Okay. And more importantly, he knows we have those options, so that makes him much less likely to betray us. Even if we're far away, he's still going to be afraid of us.
Okay, can you remind him real quick? Just remind him. Remind Bob that we'll fuck him up if he pulls a Hank.
Absolutely. Would that be the bard kind of reminding him that?
Yeah, remind him.
I'll sing a song of vengeance to him.
Yes, okay. We just want to make sure.
We've got some bows at our disposal. Yeah. And as we run through this town, it's looking like there's combat happening all around us. Not so much combat as townsfolk getting chased, really, but we're seeing red-robed figures and kobolds breaking into and out of buildings, but it seems like it's just too much. We could stop if we want to like mess with any of these people, but there's a lot of different groups causing chaos around here. As we start to worry about combat, I do just want to go down and let us know some of our combat abilities as we start to worry about these threats. I want to let our barbarian know that if we get into combat, you're going to have the ability to enter a barbarian rage. And rage gives you extra damage, but it also means when weapons hit you, they just kind of bounce right off of you. You take half damage when you're raging. You don't care. Smashing through things instead.
Okay, that's
bard.
Me.
Yeah. When you get into combat, the bard, you have some weapons like a bow to shoot Bob with. You also have a sword, but mainly you'd also have spells like illusion magic and enchanting magic. Mm-hmm. The other thing you can do is give inspiration to your allies, and that can give them little boosts to combat that they get to decide when they use your
inspiration. I'm like a strength and conditioning coach. Yes. It's perfect.
So you are literally like a coach in some ways. You're cheering people on, and they just get boosts to their roles. Nice. And Hank, coach. The Warlock Erlich, you have one main attack thing that you would do in combat.
Run backwards.
You have Eldritch Blast, and Eldritch Blast is you summoning like a ball of, it can look like fire or just like weird energy, but it deals magical damage that usually nothing is immune to. And when you launch it at people, it can hurt them for a lot. And that's called your Eldritch Blast.
Like a Kamehameha.
It is exactly, you are like launching a blast.
Exactly. Don't worry about it.
Hadouken. It's a Hadouken.
No.
It's a Hadouken. And the cleric, while a lot of what you will do is your magic is very focused on healing and boosting your allies. At the same time, you do have attack spells. You can throw sacred flames at people. And you have one powerful attack spell called Guiding Bolt. It's like a laser
human
bolt
meat shield.
Fire out of your hand.
I have a question for Billy real quick. Billy. On a scale of 1 to 10, how jealous are you of me?
Dude, I'm like about to like cause an insurrection on right. you. Like seriously.
Right. You want to be me.
Can I cuck him of the me. Alpha spot?
No,
you are a berserker.
I'm a Goliath. I'm a Goliath.
I'm going to put my Goliath dick
on
the table.
I'm literally the berserker blood guy.
You are a berserker.
No, wait, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Can Big Cat's character donate plasma in high quantities?
Billy, you've been looking fat and you probably should stay back.
I'm
human meat shield.
Mm-hmm.
But right. Heal us when
we're
get
good
down.
To go. We're good to go. That was just some internal strife. We just had to get that out.
I'm cucking.
We're good.
I would let us know that we're well aware both the barbarian and the cleric, to be fair, can take a hit for sure. Those are our two frontline characters. Cool.
That was Tim, that was really nice of you to make Billy feel better.
I just want to let you know that I do feel obligated to also throw out there that technically, the human barbarian is very big, but the Goliath would be a little taller than
there
the human.
There you go, Billy.
Barbarian.
That's nice.
Good job, Billy. Way to make him feel big. All right, so let's do it. What do we do next?
Sean Bradley, as you're charging towards the castle, you are seeing these groups, and if you don't stop to fight them, they don't seem to stop to fight you. But as you're heading towards the castle, one group is blocking our route. And just as it seems like these red-robed figures, they've drawn scimitars, and they're starting to maybe point them at us, but they're also looking like, maybe I just want to rob this cottage instead of messing with these two huge people and other individuals coming charging at the castle. As they look like they're hesitating, suddenly one of them turns around and is a woman with a golden mask on. This figure has a golden hem to her robes, and the golden mask that she's wearing seems to have tendrils that come off of it. One tendril sweeps up, two form horns going off like this, and then two sweep around in these cool arcs. But it's a very elaborate.
She seems
pretty
important.
Is that the queen?
She sounds important to me.
She looks important.
You know what I want to do? I want to take these fuckers out and impress the queen with her battle abilities.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Okay.
And as she turns, she goes, aha! And the red-robed figures seem to turn and look at what she's saying. And she says, it seems we have interlopers, interference.
Oh, goddamn
right. They have wealth that shall feed the Dragon Queen's horde.
So that's
after them, my children. And it looks like six cultists are converging on our position right now.
Fuck.
And she starts to wave her hands like she's getting ready to cast a spell, but they're taking some time to get to us. We would get to go first, and if we go through in just the order I have us, Norm the Barbarian.
Let's go time.
Yeah, I like this.
What would you like to do?
Attack, right?
I have an idea.
Well, no, we have to attack.
I have an idea of how we could attack him.
What?
So you can go berserker, right?
Yeah.
Wait,
say that again?
Big Cat can go berserker. Big Cat's character has the ability to go berserker.
Mm-hmm.
I have the ability to talk somebody up. Can I talk you into going berserker?
Yeah.
I'm like Draymond Green and he's KD and I'm just going, come
pump
on,
me guys, up guys, and then I'll go at him.
So here's what I'm going to say is this would happen on your turn, but let's say you're doing it right now. You're giving him bardic inspiration.
Yes.
You give him bardic inspiration. Then what you get is a little boost whenever you want to add it to one of your rolls. And the best time to use it is if you got close, but not quite a success, you can be like, I'm calling upon my bardic inspiration. And you like think back to that moment when the Dwarven Bard said, what do you say to him to encourage him? What do you say to him that is the encouraging bardic inspiration? It's going to be something that he'll remember.
You need a code word.
I need a code word. My code word is...
or just like, go get
donuts.
Him, tiger.
Mm.
Donuts?
Mm.
I don't know. How about...
Go nuts for donuts.
It could even be you just playing a song for him, and that encourages him. But that's how bars.
Let's rip.
Oh, let's rip.
Let's rip.
All right, yeah.
Good one.
All right.
So you say, let's rip. And now on any D20 roll that you want, you're going to get a little boost if you invoke your Bardic Inspiration. But it's after you roll. You don't have to decide until after you roll. So you run in. You swing at one of the red-robed cultists. Is that right?
Yeah.
Go berserker.
So I gotta roll, right?
Absolutely. So I assume you rage first. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. I'm going to rage first. Rage first, ask questions later. Okay.
Absolutely. And you roll a D20 and add +5 for your greatsword attack.
19!
There we go!
Hell yes! Let's fucking go!
Rage!
So you still have the Bardic Inspiration. You do definitely not need to
use it right now. Yep.
Because you just got a 24. You slash this guy, and I'm going to roll your damage for you right now. You cleave this cultist right in two.
Yes.
This guy like, I'll deal with this. Holy shit. And he just gets sliced right in half diagonally. Boom.
Yeah.
And the other five all look at us like, no, 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 no. And they start to back off. Mm-hmm. But some of them look like they're like, nah, I'll lunge forward, maybe take a stab at that barbarian. Good thing you're raging now. If they do
hell
hit you,
yes.
You'll take half damage.
Yeah.
And that was a great turn.
Learn something, Billy. Watch and learn.
And then, Wayne, you use your bonus action at this point to inspire the barbarian and then retroactively, and then you got your action still. What would you like to do? I want to let you know you have a sword and a crossbow, let's say, that you could use. That's what dwarves would use. You'd use a crossbow. But if you don't want to use your weapons, you also have magic that you could do as a bard. One spell is Vicious Mockery. You insult someone so badly that they take psychic damage from how bad your burn is.
Mental alpha.
And they get disadvantage on their next attack roll.
Okay.
Or if you really want to take somebody out, the spell Hideous Laughter makes them just start laughing uncontrollably and they drop their weapons and shit and fall to the ground laughing.
Ooh, that's cool too. So I like the tickle them to death option. I also just like roasting somebody so badly that their brain starts to eat itself. I feel like should I roast the lady with the weird hair and the braids and stuff? I feel like if I make fun of her hair, she's just going to crumble.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. She's got the mask with all the tendrils coming off it. It looks very expensive, and she looks like she is very egotistical, like she wants to be in charge here. If you use Vicious Mockery against her, she's probably going to be very mad about it.
Yeah, can I say to her, hey, that's a cool mask. Does it come in your size?
Mm.
Boom.
Nice.
You can tell it doesn't quite fit her exactly right.
Yep.
And she goes to adjust it. I'm giving her disadvantage on her saving throw, and she needs to roll. No, already she's doing bad. Yes, she's definitely failing that saving throw. And she goes, yeah, you would say that. Bah! And her mask falls off. Pick it up off the ground, and she looks very foolish in front of all of her teammates. You just dealt 3 points of psychic damage to her. I'm going to say she bonked her head while trying to, like, she stumbles and hits her head on a rock while trying to find your mask. And the next thing she tries to do will have disadvantage.
Okay.
Because you used division.
That was good. Tell her, make fun of her hair. Say like, hey, I didn't know there was a sports clips around here.
That's pretty good, too. So if I'm making fun of her, does that mean that she kind of likes me now because I've done a good job of nagging her? So she's got low self-esteem?
She might have low self-esteem. She doesn't seem to like you anymore. And in fact, she is targeting you, Bard, with whatever she does next. She's conjuring.
I mean, she likes me. It's like in kindergarten when somebody, like a girl pinches you.
Point of order, Tim. Are there love scenes in Dungeons & Dragons?
The answer to that is there can be if you want.
Okay, no, we want to keep it. No.
Yeah.
Billy, chill out. Billy was ready to
send a note.
I control all the NPCs here, so it's really your call.
Okay.
And
okay.
You have definitely gotten her quite upset at you, Bard. You're going to be her next victim with whatever magic she throws her way. But you insulted her so badly, Vicious Mockery gives her disadvantage on any attack roll. So she'll be fumbling and stumbling.
Got it. She's neutralized. Cool.
Okay. All right. So what do we do next?
And then that would bring us to Erlik's turn next. And then Berserker Billy will be up. And then the cultists and this acolyte leader are going to go.
Okay.
And so, Erlik, you could certainly fire an Eldritch Blast.
Hank lost his die, which I think was on purpose because he doesn't want to be in a fight. Like, be more obvious, Hank, that you don't want to be here right now. You'd rather be at the temple.
I had it earlier.
Okay. Man.
Look,
cast your die, Hank.
Yeah, he's got it. So what does he got to do? What does he got to roll?
If you want to go on the offense, you want to do Eldritch Blast probably, roll a D20 +5. But you can do whatever you want, and I just want to let you know you might have some mind-influencing magic, and as a warlock, you'd also be very persuasive for talking with people. I just want to make sure you know all your options, as it were.
And like, so, do you mean by people, do you mean my enemies or my teammates?
You are good persuasive with all kinds of people. You are very charismatic and good at negotiating with your friends and your enemies, but you also have magic such as charm person. That's one in the old game, you used it against a goblin to good effect, and that can turn enemies to maybe at least become nonviolent, if not turn to your side.
That's good. I mean, that's what we want here. All right. What do I need to roll? What do I need to roll?
Prepare yourself.
Is that charm person that you're thinking of doing or Eldritch Blast?
Charm person.
Charm person, the spell to hit. Who are you trying to cast it on? One of the cultists or on the acolyte, the leader who's trying to get her mask right now?
One of the cultists.
One of the cultists.
Because if you can turn the head of the cult, then you become the head of the cult.
Mm-hmm.
So you said if you want to turn the head of the cult, are you trying to get the leader here or just one of the six cultists who are working for her?
Oh, because I guess one of the six cultists. We'll just get one of them and then we'll convert her friends.
One of the six cultists. It seems like they're probably easier to get control of and to influence.
Okay.
And I'll roll for one of the cultists. There is a cultist who looks like he's definitely a half-orc of some kind, it looks like. And you kind of like he's the closest to you, so if you're just targeting the closest cultist, he kind of looks at you and then starts to crack a smile. And he says, oh, hold on. And in common, he's saying, hold on, this guy... I know this guy. Hold on. This gnome is... and he starts laughing. Hey, don't I know you? And what are you saying to him, Ehrlich?
I don't know you.
Seems like
I...
that worked. The
wait,
spell
wait,
worked.
Wait, 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 whoa, 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 whoa. Hank knows this guy?
Knows this guy. This guy knows Hank.
It's Johnny Ola. This is Godfather too.
Hank, what do you mean you don't...
How'd you know him?
How does this
I'm
guy know
you? No, no.
I knew
magic.
It was you,
it's
Hank.
My
it's
magic.
Is he like, oh, I must have one of those faces?
He's like, oh, haven't seen you in a while, Hank. Interesting. Okay.
It's my magic, right? It's just my...
It is just your magic that's making him think that he knows you. You know that your influencing is mine, but to be fair, you're the only one who knows that right now. His teammates, the cultists, are confused, and it sounds like your teammates are also a little...
Not
confused.
Surprising. Very not surprising from them. They don't understand the deep magic.
Saying? You can use part of your move to talk to this cultist, this half-orc cultist you got control of. Did you want to ask him anything? Or say anything to him?
Where are the rest?
What was that?
Where are the rest?
Where are the rest? Yeah.
He kind of gestures at the four standing cultists still around him and the acolyte who's trying to pick up her mask. And he says, and the rest are all gathering at the castle soon.
Great job, Hank. We didn't learn anything.
Are you here to help us?
This is a terrible move. That was a good job, Tim. Thank you for playing along with Hank's terrible question.
Hey, where is everyone else? Are they at the temple or the castle?
Can I ask if I can join them?
Can I join you?
Yeah. Like, hey.
Hold on, everyone. The gnome's with us. The gnome's with us. And he starts to say that. And now, Ehrlich, you know this. None of these cultists, even the leader, because she's confused. The acolyte, she's confused. So she's not even going to attack you. None of them are going to attack you until they figured out what's going on here. Eventually, they might figure out that somebody's under a charm person spell. Now, do you say anything to clarify to your teammates what's going on here?
No, fuck them. They've been haters since the jump. I've been ready to get rid of them, so I'm happy to move on to this new cult.
Wait, so you're in the cult now?
Yeah.
If...
shut up. You're part of us. You cannot. No.
Billy, the cult is fun. The cult is fun.
We'll fire you in real life.
Is he my boss? Is he my boss?
If you join the cult, Billy, you can go berserker mode.
Time out.
Go berserker mode.
Time out. I'm calling a time out. There are two things that are going on right now. We're playing Dungeons & Dragons with Tim and Billy in real life. If you betray me in PFT, you're fired.
This is not part of the game. Yeah. Are they my boss? Are they my boss in real life? In the game. Not in the game. In real life.
I can only enforce things that happen in the game world. I have no power.
Billy, you know what you should do? You should totally try to do the exact same thing that Big Cat did really well earlier, because I'm sure you'll be just as good.
Yeah, she's trying to go fucking rage mode.
You should try to go rage mode.
I'm just saying, Billy, if you want to go rage mode, the cult will have you, and you can rage mode whenever you want.
Can I meet the queen?
In real life.
This is not the queen. I think we've established that the lady with a stone mask. She's like a local. She's a capo.
And PFT already fucking roasted her, dude. Yeah.
What are you going to do?
Okay, okay.
What is Billy's options?
What are my options? Give me some
your
options.
Turn right now. So you've got, as a cleric, you have some attack spells like Guiding Bolt, that laser beam, and Sacred Flame. You've got some boosting spells that buff your friends, your allies, and healing magic. Otherwise, you've got your Warhammer. You don't have much in the way of mind control magic at the moment. Ooh, you have one spell that could mind control people. Command is you shout one word, and they have to, like, halt or flee or something like that.
Do you want to
And then you've got your Warhammer, so, your trusty Warhammer.
Okay, okay.
Attack.
Let's
him.
Do some negotiations. So Hank's on the evil side.
No,
he's just ingratiating himself with them.
He's a spy. Why don't you attack them?
Attack Hank?
No, attack the fucking little shits that we keep kicking their ass. Yeah. They're about to attack us back, Billy.
No, but aren't they like emaciated? They're like chilled?
No, they're half orcs. Give us a status update.
They're
only not attacking Erlich at the moment.
How Erlich, we need you. How closely
like defecting to them?
How closely related are orcs to Goliaths?
Well, half orcs and Goliaths aren't related to each other, but they do occupy the same environment, mountains.
Are we chill?
That probably means they fight a decent
amount.
So
fight
them,
fuck
dude.
Them go.
All right, he's going to fight.
No, I want to go. I want to go.
Respect each other.
They respect.
You know what they really respect Billy, is violence.
Yes.
All right, fuck him up. I want to do just like what's like my best move right now as a war priest. I want to get physical with them.
You want to use the hammer.
Yeah, can I use the hammer?
Throw some hands.
You could use the hammer. You could throw Sacred Flame. Probably your hammer's slightly better.
Can I
your
do both?
Most powerful attack would be Guiding Bolt to blast them with a huge laser.
Take out all of them. Let's take out all of them, Billy.
Dude, I want to hit them with the hammer.
Laser. All right, fine. Do whatever you want.
Can we can use the hammer later.
Just go. I light up my hammer with the bolt and just... Okay, whatever. Bolt. Big bolt thing.
He's
my
gonna
powerful
bolt.
One.
He's going to roll.
All right, here we go.
You know what? I'd let you say that it shoots out of the hammer.
Okay, okay. I'm in. Yeah. All right.
Thank you, Tim.
That was great, Tim.
You would have been stuck on that for a while.
Here we go. All right,
Boltman.
See you, Boltman.
18! Yeah, dude! Woo. Hell yeah, Billy. Like, way to help out the team.
5, a 23. You are hitting anyone on this map you're aiming for. Who are you aiming for? One of the 5 standing cultists or the acolyte leader?
Leader.
Do you want to take the leader out?
Gotta take the leader.
No, the lead.
Because what if she's a babe?
Oh, we could probably kidnap her.
All
right,
get
the other guys.
Kill all the other guys and then hit the leader with a sup.
You want to take out other people, but hit the leader with the sup. You know what? I'll roll your damage, and I will let you
kill cultists. War priest, baby!
We'll see how many cultists you can take down.
You're a priest, though, Billy. You swore an oath of celibacy.
You know what? That's 2 cultists right there.
Okay.
You fire at one cultist and just burn a hole in their chest. Mm. Ooh! And it shoots through that cultist into another cultist, and that cultist goes flying back into a cottage and crashes through the wall. Yes. You have taken out 2 cultists with 1 guiding bolt.
Yes.
Okay, so good stuff. Are these other cultists now, are they willing to concede defeat? Are they like, hey, one guy got cut in half. The other guy got a bolt of lightning shot through his sternum into our other guy. We're just going to bow this out.
At this point, it would be like looking like they are considering their options. They look like they want to flee. The 2 remaining cultists that are still standing want to flee. And the acolyte is very upset because she doesn't want them to flee. But as they run, she realizes she's alone here with disadvantage thanks to your insult, and she is also running for it now. So it looks like they're all trying to run at the moment. Is there any last thing that in theory would be the barbarian's turn next?
Did you hear my sup, though?
Can we catch her? Can I catch her?
She'd be like,
can I grab
sup?
Her?
Like,
can I snag her? Who's the kidnapper?
No, and she's running for it. She grabbed her mask and she's running.
Respect.
All right,
respect.
All right, it's my turn.
Can we play respect?
Hold on, it's my turn.
Respect her choice.
Can I snatch her? Can I
grab
her?
No.
Stop, Billy, stop. Can I snatch her?
You could run forward and you could try to tackle this person. This would be an athletics check. Yes, and you would have a plus 5.
I think we should do that.
I will cancel you.
No, dude, we need to get her on.
Yeah, let's get her. Let's get her. All right,
I'm going to try to do that. I'm going to try to do that.
Tackle her. Pursuit.
That's
absolutely. As you charge at her and get ready to do the tackling move, first of all, you're raging, so you're going to have advantage on this. Barbarians get advantage on all athletics checks when they are raging, including grapple. So you are going to get to roll 2 times. The number you need to beat to tackle her effectively, she's actually like bobbing and weaving. She's serpentining, and she is getting an 18 total. Ooh. So you need to beat an 18, but you have a plus five on this. And you're rolling two times.
All right. So I got a plus five, and I'm rolling twice.
Beat 18.
Oh,
shit. What's that?
That's a six.
No, six.
Nine. Your barbarian reflexes kick in.
No! What's
that?
One.
Is she getting away?
Oh, one. So luckily you're not stuck with that natural one, which would be something extra bad, but it sounds like you did not get an 18 total. So you go to tackle her. She, at the very last minute, goes right when you're going left. You hit the ground in a slide. You're not falling yet, but you do see she's turning around, and she had a ready to action as she was running to cast a spell at whoever was attacking her. Uh-oh. And she points a hand at you, Norm, and she says, "The power of Tiamat shall compel you. Flee, worm, and I need you to make a wisdom saving throw." She just used the spell command against you, the very spell I mentioned to the cleric just a moment ago. It is a one-word command, and if you roll a d20 and add a plus one to this, you need to get a 13 or higher have to obey her orders.
Fuck, I can't believe I missed that tackle. Let's rip. All right, here we go. She's like Derek. Can I use that? Can he just said let's rip. Can I use that?
Yes, absolutely. When you said let's, so you're gonna roll, and if you don't do well on this, you can invoke your bardic inspiration for sure. But you only need to use it if you fail.
All right, so I need a 13, and I got a plus one, right?
Absolutely.
Right, here we go. 12.
And you have a plus one on this. You only needed a 13. So, yes, you succeeded on this even without the bardic inspiration. And here's the thing. Since you succeed against this spell and you're not fleeing, I'm realizing, what did you get as your higher the two grapple checks when you added the plus five? Do you remember what it was?
11.
It was 11. Was that before the plus five or after the plus
five? After the plus five.
After the plus five, then you know your bardic inspiration wouldn't have made a difference if you had invoked it then.
Okay.
So we all wasted in that case.
Okay.
So you're not fleeing. You managed to hold your ground. And for just a moment, behind that strange mask-wearing woman, you had seen a shadow rising up that looked for a moment like a dragon spreading its wings with five huge heads rising up. And you're like, it's huge. I have to flee. And then you're like, wait a minute. And you smack yourself a little bit. It is an illusion. It is not really there. And you do not have to flee now. You do not have to obey that command.
Okay.
But that was your turn. And then Wayne, that would bring us to you.
Come on,
next.
Wayne.
Is there some sort of respecting spell? Can I cast a die to respect the woman? Mm.
So here's what you could do. You could try to make, now that someone's already tried to chase her, it didn't quite work. You could roll persuasion to try to get her to surrender now, potentially. And to be fair, you'd also have the spell charm person. So if you wanted to cast charm person to make somebody like you, you could try to use that spell in particular. I don't think any of these are necessarily respectful options, but she's getting ready to cast spells to attack us.
She's trying to hurt us. So do we want to make friends with her, or do I just say fuck it and go melee on her?
I don't think
we can be friends with her. We got to get her and get information out of her.
But I can if I go persuasion. I can make her talk to us.
Yeah.
Or can Bob Costas kill her?
Bob Costas is following you, I will assume, Bard, and as he runs in, he says, "Oh, that an acolyte. I don't know her. I don't know that one, but I talked to Tiamat. I talked to Tiamat. She's a very special leader."
He's lying.
Yeah, I think he's lying to us.
All right, so what, you want to persuade her?
So I can persuade her, make her become friends with us, and then she can tell us what the hell is going on with this shadow dragon.
Yes.
So if you roll well on this persuasion check, you might get her to surrender, but you run after her and the barbarian, and you can roll and add a plus five to this.
You
could convince her to throw down her arms and surrender.
Okay, I'm going to call this my respect roll here. There we go. It's a 8. I have 8 respects for her. Plus 5.
And then you add plus 5 to this with a 13. She turns back, and then she says, "Tiamat may spare you, but she's still running and trying to cast spells to attack us if we chase her. She's not going to be targeting you, Bard, but that is all that you're getting right now."
Okay.
To be fair, if you say something to her, she might blurt out an answer right now, but she's not going to stop running at the moment.
She basically was like, "Hey, dude, you seem like a nice guy. I'm not into nice guys."
She was like, "You got a great personality."
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. I've been there before. Can I ask her, what's the deal with that shadow dragon?
Oh, she gestures at the kind of shadow. Now, actually, I got to warn you. You didn't see that.
Oh, okay. Then I'll change my question.
I'm the one who's tripping.
I'd like to change my question then. Where are you going?
Where are you going? She says, I am fleeing back to Frula Mondath. She will know what to do next.
Oh, Frula Mondath is a bigger
Please,
boss.
Just let me go. I will not attack you any longer if you do not attack me.
No.
We are only here for the money.
We have to stop him.
We have to.
She's going to go tell him, big
hey,
boss lady.
Yeah.
All right.
You got to take her out.
Is it Hank's
it's
turn?
It's Hank's role. Hank.
Now, that brings us from your turn, Wayne, to Erlich's turn. Now, Erlich, yeah,
Killer
Hank,
Hank,
what would you like to do? And in theory, you've got one of these cultists who's trying to run away right now, charmed at the moment, but he's like heading out, trying to run for it. And you could chase after him and he'd be very friendly with you, even if the other people wouldn't be. At the same time, you could do an attack spell at somebody or there is now a clear route to the castle if you want.
Should we go to the castle?
Yeah, you want to run to the castle?
We're going to let her go to Frula Mondath?
Where's the
Can we yeah, can Wait, I what? Am I would I be able to take her out, just eliminate her from the equation, cuz that's what we want, right?
Or just
yeah,
capture her.
Cuz I'm afraid that she's going to tell Frula Mondath like,
yeah,
"Hey, you
her.
Guys got to roll deep on this."
We should
All right,
kill
let me yeah, let's I want to go after her. I want to go after her, the witch.
Absolutely. Were you hoping to deal enough damage to knock her out
yes.
or were you going to try to like tackle her?
No, KO, one shot.
KO, absolutely. I'll let you use your Eldritch Blast to knock somebody out for sure, and we'll roll a d20 plus 5 to see if you hit her.
Let's go, Hank.
You conjure up this strange energy
Let's
in your
go,
hand.
Erlich.
I got a 4.
God damn it, Hank.
How'd you do on that?
Let him
a
go.
4.
Hank
a
the
4,
worst.
Even with a plus 5, you are launching an Eldritch Blast in her direction, but it is she turns and ducks out of the way, and it goes.
You didn't fucking kill her
bro,
either.
You did nothing.
She avoided your attack like it was
nothing.
She shredded your defense. She's a better juker than you are in
guys.
NCAA football.
God damn it!
Got to work on the pursuit.
All right.
Shooting no all right.
So
at
now
her.
What do we got?
She's
Billy's
ducking it.
Billy's up.
You can learn Berserker Billy, you'd be up. What would you like to do then? All she's right. going to get a chance to try to run away from us, but she also sees spells being cast at her, and she might cast a spell back.
All right.
Yo, you got to take
Billy,
it out,
you're
Billy.
The meat shield. Just
no,
go
no,
at her.
I got an idea. I got an idea.
No.
Go ham at her.
Get her.
No. We get Bob to send a message.
What?
No.
Just, Billy, you were way
you're
too inside your own
dude.
Head.
Go for her.
Okay. Hammer time, hammer lightning.
That's
good.
Hammer time, hammer lightning.
Get that thing going again.
Ride the lightning.
All right.
So if you have Bob with you, you could get him trying to like talk to this person, see if it'll help you. You'd have plus 4 on persuasion if you're trying to talk to her. Is that what you said you were trying to do?
No, you know what? Time for that. Just Warhammer, Hammer of Lightning.
Absolutely, 100%. If you charge her and swing your Warhammer, you think it would probably deal enough to knock her out after the 3 damage she's already taken. So roll a d20, and you add plus 4 for your Warhammer.
Oh,
let's go,
yeah.
Billy.
Hammer
go,
time, hammer
Billy.
Time, hammer time.
Let's
come
go.
On, come on. Billy.
Fuck.
It's a three, Tim.
Unfortunately, and you don't have Bardic Inspiration at the moment,
no,
and she
doesn't.
Wouldn't be giving you nothing with getting advantage on that, unfortunately. Now, you've charged her. At the same time, Bob hasn't done anything. So as Bob runs up to follow us, he starts to see what the bard was doing. And on Bob's turn, just before she runs further, would someone like to roll for Bob to see if Bob can convince her? He's saying, hey, hold on, stop.
Bubba.
We just want to talk to you.
Bubba, you
want to
roll
says,
for Bob?
Wait.
That'd be sick. Okay, we got Bubba rolling for Bob right now.
Yeah, who would like to roll for Bob?
Bubba's got it here.
Eight.
He rolled an eight.
Eight. He's got a plus 1 on this, and with a 9, she just spits on the ground and says, kobold filth, you traitor! And Bob just shrugs. He says, ass, I can't please some people. And she is trying to run for it right now, but she is trying to hide amongst some buildings. She is not managing to hide. You see her diving through a window. She crouches. She rises up, and she's still watching us, getting a spell at the ready. That would bring us back to Norm the Barbarian.
We gotta finish
Norm,
her off, big cat.
Like?
We gotta finish her off.
Yeah,
we gotta fuck her up.
She's gonna mess us up.
Yeah,
what, home,
yeah, yeah, yeah. So whatever I gotta do, I'll do for the team, Hank.
Spam RPGs.
Are you going to tackle her again, or are you going to just try to knock her out?
I think
with
I just
got
to try to fucking knock
yeah,
her out. I
enough
clearly
tackling.
Can't tackle.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Can't wrap up.
Then go right ahead. You're going to roll a d20 plus 5 with your greatsword.
All right, what am I looking for here?
You probably not very high armor. You hit a kobold with a 13. You think if she has better armor, you don't think it's much better.
Okay. Ten. That should be good.
10 plus 5, so a 15 total.
Yep.
With a 15 total, you swing down through the window, shattering the window frame, and you swing down. She raises up her arm to protect herself, and you hit with that, dealing full damage. And were you aiming to knock out or kill this acolyte?
I don't have time for
it. Yeah, we gotta kill her.
We already have one hostage.
Yeah.
With a slash, your sword is buried in her, and she is slain.
All right.
Yes!
In your mind, for just a moment, you hear a roar of a dragon, as though there's a dragon roaring in your mind.
I'm still tripping. Yeah. I'm still tripping.
And she is slain, and you have defeated her, and now you are standing right in front of the castle. There are no cultists blocking your way to the castle.
In theory,
that is your turn, Norm.
Okay, let's go. Let's go one more around. Yep. So yeah. PFT, Hank, and then Billy will go, and then we'll end there. So let's try to get to a good spot here.
Yeah.
That was exciting.
So we're outside the castle. We've got a couple kills under our belt. Let's go. Do we just go inside, or are we trying to sneak in?
I think we just go in.
Just game plan. Just go the fuck in.
Yeah, he said no one's in there. No one's in front of us.
Okay. Yeah, let's go in. Front door.
No one's blocking our way to the castle.
Mm-hmm. Front door.
Let me heal everybody first.
As you start to head toward the castle gate, you can see this. There's militia guards, town guardsmen, with bows out as they see you, the dwarf. They're like, okay, they're all right. They're not cultists. Come on in, head in. And they're taking the occasional shot when a kobold or cultist pokes their head out. And it looks like there's 30-something people gathered in front of the great hall of this keep. So you run in through the gatehouse, and you're inside a little courtyard. And in this courtyard, in front of the main keep, there looks like there's a guy in a purple vest with white hair, the mayor, you think. Mm. And he's telling this crowd of 30-something people, all will be well. Don't worry. All will be well. Then somebody says, well, what about the dragon? And everyone starts going nuts and screaming again. And he's like, ooh, wiping his brow. He seems very upset and doesn't have a good answer to that question. You also notice there is a dwarf here. One dwarf. Most of these people are humans in this village that you've seen so far. But there's a dwarf running around who is healing people, it seems. There's a bunch of guards lying around who seem like they got badly injured, and he's trying to administer first aid.
Okay.
That's all of what you see right now.
Can we tell if they're like burn marks on them, or are they battle scars?
It looks like there are some battle scars from blades and stuff, but two of them look maybe burned. It's unclear. They look like they've been damaged by fire, but it doesn't look like normal burn marks, you think. You could go up and you could try to make a medicine or arcana check on them to see if you know what kind of damage they got.
What do dragons eat?
Ooh. Dragons, as far as you know, eat meat in large, large quantities. And after that, it really depends on the dragon.
Okay, I'm just wondering if we can poison this dragon, like throw out a bunch of food for it that I've put a spell into, and then we kill the dragon like without even having to throw hands
flex,
at it.
Flex, yeah. I like it.
Can I make fake dragon food that's poisonous?
You would have a spell called Minor Illusion where you can create a human-sized like pile of something like dragon food. And I'd say for the purposes of this spell, I'd let you make a good smell coming off of it also. Mm. But here's the catch. The moment a dragon touches it, their hand will go right through the illusion. So you do have that at your disposal.
So I can lure them, but I can't actually poison them.
So lure them, and then we'll have Hank and Billy do something.
Yeah, okay. I'd like to make hologram version of dragon food.
I love that. Now, the best of your guess, a good example would be the classic, like the T-Rex in Jurassic Park, a goat just kind of leashed. Maybe up on the wall, perhaps, or even, do you want to put it up? Where do you want to put this illusion? Do you want to put it outside the castle, inside the castle, on the walls? Where?
In the courtyard, do you think?
Yeah, that's
and then we can get high ground, and we can get a dragon in close quarters?
Yeah.
Ambush.
Okay, yeah, let's put it in the middle.
Or should we put it in a room and lock him in there? No. Is there like a dungeon in there,
but
in the castle?
Might not be able to smell it.
There does seem like there would be, there's big doors leading into, there are probably dungeons underneath this castle.
I think we should
think a dragon would be too big.
Okay.
Okay. What about a man cave?
Courtyard.
All right, so courtyard.
Okay, we'll lure the dragon to the courtyard, like a big bowl of whatever type of dragon food. Like some sort of goat.
Dragon
I like that.
Soup.
Dragon soup, like Cincinnati chili.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're making like a big stew. It looks like a big meaty stew for this dragon.
Yeah.
Like the goat legs floating in it.
Yeah, kind of. Some shredded cheese
it's
on top.
More. Mm-hmm. Completed meal. I love that. That's good. Mm. People will see this huge bowl appear and they will be shocked and will jump back. And then some kids will run up and they'll start touching the illusion and waving their hands and it'd be like, it's not real. It's not real. Whoa. Do you do anything? The mayor's like, whose soup is that?
I put up a sign that says, please do not touch the soup.
A sign appears, please do not touch the soup. It flashes for just a moment and then
hot
disappears.
Soup, hot soup, hot soup. Do not touch. Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. And Ehrlich, you, in theory, we had already established, do speak the draconic language. You could have an attack that, in theory, you could like get ready right now if you just want to ready an attack for when something does show up. But in theory, you'd also have spells like Charm Person, and you'd also be very persuasive for talking to townsfolk or talking to anybody around.
I feel like I just need to get ready. Load up the chopper.
What about persuade them?
It's December 31st.
Persuade everyone to pretend that the stew is real.
I'll have people line up with bowls
and
stuff.
Like, we got to trick the fuck out of this dragon.
But don't we need ammo for when the dragon comes? Shouldn't I load up?
I think we've got ammo.
I've been a beast.
You never have to reload a sword.
Whatever the team says. Let's convince the townspeople that the soup is real.
Wait, does anybody else in this town recognize Hank?
As a duplicitous fuck?
Well, here's the thing. He's a gnome, so no, it doesn't seem like anybody recognizes him in this town, but he's definitely noteworthy.
Convenient.
Most of these people are humans, and as a gnome, he'd be like a little spellcaster running around here.
Okay.
Very noteworthy.
So can we have him, like, get basically the entire little area all in line? Like, hey, this is the plan.
You're telling them this is the plan. I love that, absolutely. So you get them in on this plan. Roll persuasion with a +5, a d20 +5, to convince them to get in on this idea.
7.
And to make sure they do it well.
He rolled a 7.
Down, but
he rolled a 7. 7.
A 7 plus 5, a 12 is enough.
Yes!
You're actually doing a pretty good job. Surprisingly good at putting up this ruse of being hungry. Probably the smell of the stew helps them, and they're all loudly saying, like, I hope no dragons take this food. Because this that they're also aware maybe of what we're plotting, they're also doing a good job of keeping their distance from the stew. Like, I want to get closer, but I'm not too close. They know what
the
we're
sign
planning.
Let them know that.
Love
they're
it.
In on the joke.
Real hungry with some stew. All right. And so Billy's going to get us finally. This is perfect because we're going to get set up for the dragon.
So I want to set the trap. What type of trap can I set? So when the dragon comes, can we like throw like a huge net on it? Or like, what does my war priest magic got going?
Let's see.
Maybe that big thing in Game of Thrones on the ship types thing. You know what I'm saying?
Like the chain in
Game of Thrones. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. What you want to queue up, I'm going to tell you why. It's a guiding bolt, and here's why. Because it didn't come into play when you were vaporizing the cultists in one go, but when you hit something with a guiding bolt, everybody who fires after you gets advantage on their attack. So you go first, then you put a bullseye on this thing, and everybody who shoots after you gets a bullseye.
I just want to set up to fuck up this dragon. Yeah, like, I'm camping on the dragon.
You're like you're
the
pointing
camper.
The laser
at the
dragon.
The guiding bolt.
Okay, so does he roll?
Because it's a readied shot, you are going to get to fire it before anything else happens, and then the smell starts wafting out, and you are going to get to roll as our finale for the day, because what you are seeing, first of all, hearing, is a flapping sound, a leathery swooping of wings, as in the distance behind several cottages, we see blue lizard-like wings spread.
Okay.
And a blue-scaled dragon takes off into the air, flaps once, twice, flies towards the castle, has a big horn on its head, and says, what's that smell?
Yeah.
Go ahead and roll a d20
plus 5.
Roll,
d20
Come
plus
on,
5.
Come on, Billy.
Come
on. Don't let us down, dude.
Come on, 20.
Come on.
Come on, 20.
Oh, he rolled a 5.
Okay, hold on. What's the roll?
5.
50.
a 5, and then with a plus 5, that would be a 10. But however, I am giving for this awesome idea some, oh, better yet, I don't have to give DMs inspiration. You're surprising the dragon. Okay. You're in a hidden position. The dragon's looking around for food saying, oh, this is going to be good. Roll one more time. Come on. Have advantage for surprising the dragon.
Here we go. Here we go.
Don't let us down.
Come on.
9.
9 with a plus 5, 14. So here's the thing. I'm just going to ask one question. Would the bard have given inspiration to this?
Yes.
You could have done your illusion and still given inspiration.
Yeah, I'll give, yeah.
So, bard?
I'll give him a little pep talk. I'll amp him up.
What did you say is your pep talk?
I said all gas, no brakes.
Mm-hmm. All gas, no brakes. And you remember him saying just before you fired, all gas, no brakes. Roll. We're going to roll an extra D6 to see what you add on to this.
Mm.
And it's a full plus 6. That's exactly what you needed to that roll.
Okay.
Your beam hits the dragon right in the face. Bzzz. And the dragon lights up with a glowing halo all around it. And for just a moment, you hear your war god's drums. Bum, 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 bum. Everybody can hear it. But then the dragon turns its head to our castle and goes, oh, Indraconic, you're all in for it now. And starts flying towards the castle.
Oh, perfect cliffhanger.
Oh, I like that.
Hell yeah.
The dragon is doing that the Chris Farley gift when he realizes it's fake Folger's coffee.
Yes.
You son of a bitch.
You got my attention. All right. Well, Tim, that was fantastic. So 2 weeks from now, we will find out what happens when the dragon comes and fucks with our castle. This was awesome, man. Thank you, as always.
Thank you, Tim.
Absolutely. Such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right, we'll see you in a couple weeks, man.
See you, dog.
Take care. See you in a few weeks.
Love you guys.
Talking away. I don't know what to say. I'll say it anyway. Today is another day to find you shining away. Oh, I'll be coming for your love, okay? Take on me. Better to be safe than sorry. Stay out for me. At least the better to be safe than sorry.
It's Pardon My Take, presented by Barstool Sports.